Daniels.
I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I love hearing those young voices. Okay, we asked Jeremiah and Pam to be here today. Stand up, Pam. You don't get to sit down yet. Because we, at our last meeting, approved a new lease for the fisherman's dock with the ice machine and all that. But the fisherman's organization, with Pam as the manager, have been taking care of that dock for us for several years. And I just wanted to publicly thank you for doing that for us. It's been a wonderful cooperative effort, and we really appreciate the time and effort that you put into that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, now you can sit down. Jeremiah gets to talk. I said that as long as Jeremiah was going to be here, he did have some comments on D2, and so I allowed him to make them now.
Thank you very much, Mayor and City Council and staff members. I would like to also, before I get on to D2, mention that coming up later on in the month, or perhaps in November, we have a lease on a storage facility, indoor and outdoor storage facility, that is part of the area that was given to the city of Morro Bay and shared between our organization, the city, and the Coast Guard. We have just completed an inspection of that lease site by the current Dynegy, who is the ultimate controller of the properties. Our lease is with the city, though, and we would like an extension on that lease. It'll be coming up in the future. I just wanted to let the city and city council know, because nobody goes down there and views it. It's pretty much out in the boonies. But we have just completed refacing the entire building. The building is 16 storage, two-story, 16-foot tall. Storage facilities. It's two buildings, 16 storage facilities, and we're not talking about repainting. We completely refaced all new steel, new downspouts, new gutters, new steel, the whole entire, both buildings, and they were very happy. The Dynegy, the current owners of the power plant here, were very happy to see that, and I just wanted to make everybody aware that we have done that. I hope that lease will be met with smiling faces up there. As far as D2, we would encourage you to adopt a position from the city of Morro Bay. The federal government is currently in the process of changing all of the rules and regulations on ground fish stocks. It appears they're going to go to it now. There is one operating in Morro Bay with a permit from the Nature Conservancy. The system will possibly eliminate open access, which our fishermen have used to access ground fish stocks in the past when times were tough, when they faced salmon disasters such as we have this last year, and they will be giving all of the stocks to these larger trawl vessels, of which we currently only have one. So you can see that the impact here is going to be another nail in the coffin. All we're asking is that they leave some stocks for community investment, if you will, for open access. Just we have a tremendous amount of resource here in front of Morro Bay, and it's our big fear, and I've been up here in front of you for many years. It's our big fear that we are going to be eventually completely left out. And this is when, right now, this is when we are on the verge of being left out completely. So the stocks will be accessed. Don't get me wrong. There will be somebody fishing them. You won't see the boats. They'll be from other ports. They'll be large vessels, and they won't be stopping here. They'll be taking their product to Oakland, putting them in a container, shipping it to Japan or wherever its ultimate destination will be. Morro Bay will get nothing out of the deal. So we're going to stand to lose more. Adopting this position would be a good step for the fisheries, and we'd sure appreciate it if you would. And all it's asking for is a little bit of access to the ground fish that we have right here in front of our harbor.
Okay.
So thank you very much for the opportunity
to
speak.
Thank you, Jeremiah. Okay, and for our business representative today, Laura Pinsky. Is Laura here? There we go. From Harbor Floral. And she's going to tell us about her business.
Hi, good evening. I am Laura Repsinski, and I'm here to represent Harbor Floral Studio. And I am a flower shop here in Morro Bay. I've been a Morro Bay business for almost 6 years now. And I've been very excited to expand over the last year and have a studio location in North Morro Bay. Just a landmark Spencer's grocery store. I'm 5 down from them, right next to the Beach House Bistro. As far as what I do, I specialize in weddings. So 85% of my business is wedding related. And we're gearing up for the bridal fair happening in San Luis Obispo at the Madonna Expo Center. That will be on Sunday. So anybody who's getting married or knows somebody who's getting married, come visit my booth and say hi. And let's see. No problems here. I also do local delivery. So if you have a birthday, an anniversary, any occasion, give me a call or stop by, and I will do a custom arrangement and deliver it. We also are doing classes. We're doing an Ikebana workshop, which is Japanese floral design, and that will be November 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. It's a series of 4. You can take 1 class or 4 classes, but it should be pretty good. And the instructor for that is Donna Dysart. She's excellent. And come and say hello.
Thank you so much. Okay, for our announcements, it's bird festival time. I wanted to make sure that everybody knows that. We have our brochures out, and the events are available at our website. You can get one of these at the Chamber of Commerce, and there will be some at the library and the museum as well. So I encourage all of you birders out there to sign up and join us for the festival in January. Let's see. I'm going to take a little time here and clarify something. At our last meeting, the council voted on a concept plan for a conference center. And since that time, I have never before heard so much confusion about what happened at a meeting as I have in talking to people around town about that one. There's all kinds of, you know, well, there was two projects brought before you and everything. So I just want to go through exactly what we did last time and where it's going from here. As you know, the Outrigger site was put out to bid because of some extensions that weren't met, some needs that needed to be met. So it was put out to bid. And the Outrigger site leaseholder and another leaseholder both put in projects. Suggested projects. The Outrigger one was for a bed and breakfast and a restaurant and retail. The other one was for a conference center and restaurant and retail. So those were the two things that an independent committee reviewed. They felt that the conference center project offered the greater revenue possibilities for the city. So they suggested that to the council. The council then approved that and gave the applicant, I think, 9 months to come up with a concept plan on that project, which they did. And we then, was it a year? Okay, full year. So they did bring that back to us within the time, and that is what we voted on at our last meeting, a concept plan. We approved a concept plan. That now will go to the Coastal Commission, and before it ever comes back to us, it'll be a precise plan before a planning commission. It's not over yet. There will be more public hearings. I want to make that very clear. Now, there was not a second project suggested. There was an offer, a one-page non-binding offer, to purchase the property. And since then, we have received another offer to purchase, and also we had a request for proposals that we had put out on the Brannigan's Market Street property, and that did bring in a proposal. So that's a whole separate issue. It was never a conference center site, and that we are going to be looking at. We're getting a new appraisal on the property, and we will decide whether any of those offers are viable for the property. They'll all be considered. There'll be public comments and everything on all of those. I just want to make that clear because people have mixed the two of them up quite a bit. So hopefully that clarifies that issue. Other announcements? Bill?
Okay. In the spirit of keeping you informed about other dull, boring government meetings that take on elsewhere in the county, I sit on the Air Pollution Control District Board, and Morro Bay will be getting about $15,000, if I remember correctly, for helping us with our greenhouse gas inventory.
Maybe?
Yes, in regards to the Water Resources Advisory Committee this month, just a reminder that the county is doing an excellent job about the mussels in the freshwater lakes. There's an extreme amount of concern about Lake Manasimiento, so we moved to take some, hopefully encourage the county to take some action to start protecting that lake because it's a water source for some of the cities in Northern County. Doesn't affect us directly outside of the fact if you have a freshwater boat that you take there. The second announcement is from the Housing Trust Fund. I mentioned last month that there will be some grant money available coming up in about 9 months next year. And I believe I said it was for low and very low income. It's also for moderate income people that will be available coming down the pike, and I just wanted to let you know about that. I have two announcements on the overhead. The first one is regarding a children's center over in Los Osos that is opening. I know that that's been a concern of ours since we closed down one of our programs through the city. So I wanted to make families aware of that this Saturday there's an open house in Los Osos if you want to check out this new facility. And if someone could change that poster, there's another one underneath. Thank you very much. Great. And this is about core values, and it's another workshop related to environmental planning that anyone is welcome to attend to. I believe it's on October 20th, and there should be a website and phone number on there if you're interested in knowing about remodels or building projects for that.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. As you know, we're getting into flu season now. If you would like a free flu shot, you're welcome to go to Sierra Vista Hospital this Saturday from 8 to 11 a.m. and receive your free flu shot. That'll be given in the auditorium at Sierra Vista Hospital. And on another note, there's already a few of us that are working hard on the community Thanksgiving dinner that we're going to have at the community center on Thanksgiving Day. We'll be serving from 1 to 3 p.m. We'll be cooking the turkeys the night before and then working all day to get everything ready. If you need a ride, all you have to do is call Dial-A-Ride, and a trolley will even come pick you up and take you home. So there's no excuses for if you're alone or you just want to join in with your neighbors and fellow citizens. We'd love to have you. We're ready for as many as show up. So keep that on your calendar, Thanksgiving Day from 1 to 3 at the community center.
Yes, on October 3rd, I attended an event sponsored by the C5 Coalition, the Central Coast Clean Cities Coalition, and our speaker there was Larry Allen from the APCD, and he was talking about AB 118, which I'll talk about later when we're talking about the alternative vehicles in the city. But it was about alternative fuel choices, and I got this nice brochure there called Drive Into the Future, and basically talking about converting over to others, your picnic in one of the parks, anything like that. And so I would like our city manager, Andrea, to talk a little bit about this. Andrea? I'd given a heads up to Andrea that she might give you a contact phone number to call or an email where you could send your photos. You retain copyright rights to it, correct?
Yes, you're correct.
Okay.
They can call the city's main number at 772-6200, okay. Or go on the city's website, which is morrow-bay.ca.us, and send us an email with your pictures. I think there is a deadline. I think we're a couple weeks out, at least, for our deadline.
Right.
But it's probably 772-6200 is going to get you the best information.
Right, and I think that from what I read in the update that you sent to us, that people get credit. You'll credit them with their name on the website, and okay, so that'd be great. I'd like to have mostly, we're talking about getting some Europeans to send us their pictures of Morro Bay, but I'd rather have credit given to local folks, so especially people like you, Gary, out there. You've got good pictures. Excellent, very good. Okay, thank you.
Okay, one thing I did forget. You may have noticed that the roundabout is round and working, and it's working quite well already. We are going to have, there's an instructional video already running on Channel 20. We are going to have, I think our PWAB group is going to take a drive on the trolley and take you through the roundabout, so there'll be that learning tool. And also we will be offering rides on the trolley on a Saturday somewhere in the future when it's complete for people who are unsure about driving through it and want to just have somebody else drive them through it first. So that will be happening. It'll be free to our residents. So we're trying to get all those educational things out there. If you encounter it now, it's pretty easy. Just go slow and be careful. All right. Other reports we have this time, it's Recreation and Parks and Harbor and Public Services. So, Harbor, you want to start?
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. We'll use our time to have our beach lifeguard supervisors, Kale Moore and Dimitri Juraki, come up to the podium and give you a quick report on the summer beach lifeguard program.
Okay. Hello. Good evening. This year's beach lifeguard program safely accommodated a very busy beach season with a seasonal beach usage estimated of nearly 81,000 people, a significant increase from years past. Overall, the lifeguard staff performed very well and kept incidences down to a minimum. In addition to lifeguard supervisors, Dimitri and myself, the Harbor Department hired 6 new seasonal lifeguards. Lifeguard towers 1 and 2 were first opened on Memorial Day weekend on May 24th and were open weekends until the week of June 14th. The towers then remained open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. through Labor Day weekend on September 1st. Thereafter, the towers remained open for 2 additional weekends and were then closed for the season on September 14th. This amounted to a season total of 91 days lifeguarded. The lifeguard towers removed from the beach on September 16th. During the summer, there were a total of 37 rescues.
Chief Harbor Patrol Officer Eric Andersby worked with Kale and I to complete an application for the United States Life Saving Association Agency Certification Program. That's a certification that validates our program's effectiveness and professionalism, and that application was turned in September 10th, and it's already met preliminary approval by the regional review officer. Next, it'll go to a state review and then a national review board in November. So next year, we hope to be able to use that certification to host our own lifeguard academy here in Morro Bay and train all of our new lifeguards in-house. And tentative dates for that lifeguard academy is going to be May 1st through 3rd and 8th through 10th.
Thank you so much for all you do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think a hands will. Okay, and Recreation Parks, Joe.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Recently, our maintenance division has successfully completed changing of the offices for city staff. We moved the personnel clerk, city attorney, his support staff, the administrative analysis, and also the accounts clerk. So a lot of office changing, and with that office changing, there was painting and cleaning and minor renovations that went around with that, and we're just concluding those moves this week. Kids Club will be celebrating lights after school And it's a nationally program that recognizes the positive impact of after-school programs. And we're redoing our annual bike parade, and that will be on, I don't have the date here, I believe it's this Thursday. And it starts at 2:30 at Kids Club. The police commander and another officer will be there doing bike safety checks. And after the bike safety check, there'll be police escort parade down to the cloisters for fun and treats. On Saturday, November the 1st, at Rockies, your teen center, we'll be hosting our annual Halloween party. The festivities there begin at 6, and they will run until midnight. It includes a costume party, scary movies, prizes, and treats. All teens that are in 7th through 12th grade are certainly invited.
We have the interest of a lot of members of the audience right now.
And last weekend, we had the Oktoberfest softball tournament. We had 6 Bin softball teams that competed. First prize went to Frozen Rope, and second place went to a local team, Henson's Tire. And a total of 9 co-ed teams played, and the first place team was Water Connection, and the second place was It's On, and both those teams were from Bakersfield. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Public Services, you have a water report. What's new, Bruce?
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. Just to remind folks, the state water shutdown begins on October 27th and runs through November 17th. In preparation for that, we've been providing updates beforehand, and we've also distributed mailers community-wide reminding folks to be conscious in terms of conserving water during that short period of time. Just a precautionary measure, we've secured an alternative, safe, potable drinking water source. It's curing now. It'll take 7 days. But if anybody's interested, they can take a look at it. It's one of the sustainable, environmentally sensitive and conscious development techniques, low-impact development. It's one of the things where the water will be able to drain through the porous concrete. So that's across the street from our offices. We can show people where it is pretty easily. At any rate, that's one of the things we're doing. So if you have any questions, be happy to answer them.
Okay. Yes.
Bruce, during state water shutdown, will water testing increase or stay the same during that period?
It'll be the same. We'll pick up testing in the wells. We do a lot more. We'll do it more frequently in addition to what's mandated under our permit, but we'll do more of it.
Okay, and Susan Slayton called me with some good news, so give us a one-sentence happy news thing.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council members. Well, normally I don't have good news, but this was a little bit of a surprise. We have some unaudited numbers for the June 30, 2008 financials, and our revenues came in at 105% of budget, which is a good thing. It's a surplus of just a little over $125,000. Expenditures came in at 99.6% of budget. So congratulations to all the department heads on that one. That was quite a surprise. So this looks like, and these are pretty firm numbers. I've worked them through one of our state controller's reports. Didn't see any errors that jumped right out. So I feel pretty confident with them to say that we did come in ahead. And that's kind of a good thing this year.
Okay.
Madam Mayor,
yes.
If I could just take this moment to add my congratulations to the various departments. And if I'm not mistaken, Susan, this is the third year that we've come in making a little extra money at the end or having saved some. So I guess if you want to put it in business terms, this is the third year we've made a profit, although we don't do that with taxpayers' money. I think it's great. When we pass a budget, we can do it with confidence because I think it gives us that ability because we've been doing this now, and she's pretty much right on target, and I think that that shows we're pointed in the right direction.
Will that money go into our reserve account?
That would if it were actual cash dollars. The cash dollars is a different story. We're in the general fund actually down cash because we didn't receive some grants in a timely manner. We have one particular grant that's about $1.6 million that we laid out money for and didn't receive. So we are negative on our cash, but we do have a sizable receivable that will be coming in quickly.
Okay. We didn't have any closed session today, so there's no closed session report. We'll start public comment, but I'm going to ask the public's indulgence. Our first public hearing item is what all these young people are here for, and this is a school night, and so I would like to allow those, they're not all going to speak, but the representatives from their group, I would like them to come first on the public comment, and then we're going to let them go.
That came up in our monthly meetings. One from Lillian Sandoval's father, who works at the CMC, he says, wow, he says, you know, years ago, for health and medical reasons, we have a complete ban of smoking in the prison. And the kids are like, well, if their prisoners don't have smoke, how come there's smoke in our parks? We're like, good point. And the second interesting point that really brought a visual to the children was about the effects of smoking, even if it is in a particular banned area. For instance, if smoking was allowed in a parking lot or smoking was allowed 150 feet from the toy area, they realize that that still floats over to where they are. They use the analogy of in a pool. What if just one area of the pool was allocated for the peeing section? And they were like, oh. So I said, that's the same thing with smoke. And that created a big visual to them. They said, that's what's happening in our parks as well. So thank you for allowing us to be here tonight. And I'm going to turn it over to these wonderful, talented students who have these healthy pink lungs. And they want to share with you their feelings and hope to convince you to ban smoking in our parks altogether.
Hi, I'm Holland Rugerbrett, and parks should be smoke-free because smoking hurts the environment and small children or animals because they can pick it up and not know what it is and put it in their mouth. It could harm them by giving them cancer and diseases and can harm the people who smoke. If we don't stop secondhand smoking, smoking, people and kids will not be able to play at parks because the smoke will cause people and animals to get diseases or cancer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lena Goldberg, and I want smoke-free parks because sometimes I go to parks and find cigarette butts in the sand. I hope you make the parks smoke-free. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Josh Panko. I hope we can have a smoke-free park because I find lots of cigarette butts and it kind of makes me gross out, and smoking can sometimes kill people, and I don't want anybody getting harmed by smoke. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Evelyn, and I want parks and beaches to be smoke-free because it's bad for little kids and you can have black lungs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Emily Gaycad, and I want to ban smoke at our parks because when I'm at the park, I don't like smelling the toxic air of smoke. Smoking. because it makes me sick. When I smell the cigarettes, it makes me want to leave the park. I don't think anyone wants to smell cigarettes at our parks. So
we smell smoke, and it affects us, and we don't like it. And thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Melissa Martinez, and I want to ban smoking in parks because when I go to the park, I don't like smelling smoke because it really hurts my throat, and I don't like having to go to a different park all the time because I see a cigarette on the ground or something. because we tried something at Del Mar Park, I think 50 feet away from the thing, but it was really close to the creek where other kids play, so it still didn't work. So even if we try and go back or something, it can still float into the play area, or it can pollute next to the creek or something. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Audrey, and I think we should have smoke-free parks because when people have asthma or allergies, if they breathe it, they'll cough out lots of smoke. And also, I think that little kids, they might dig in the sand and find cigarettes and put it in their mouth. I would really appreciate if every one of you that are here tonight will make our park smoke-free. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Matilda Laurie, and I want smoke-free parks because when you smoke, it makes you sick, and also people that, when they see someone smoking, when they breathe, it can make the bad stuff go in you, and you could get sick. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brian Curry, and I want smoke-free parks because then you will be healthy, and if you smoke, then you will cough, and I don't like to cough. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, all of you, for being here. Thank you for taking part in the process, and we're going to talk about that in our public hearing. So if you would like to go now, we'll let you go before we let other people talk, just so it won't be distracting for them. Thank you all for coming. And thank you, everyone else, for indulging that and letting them go first. I appreciate it. We will now open our public comment period to the adults. Yes, come forward, please.
I think we're going to be smoke-free in all the parks. First of all, I'd like to say thank you. My name is Bill Black. I'm a resident here in Morro Bay. I want to talk about the sales of the Prius we had 2 weeks ago down at the Harbor Festival. The sales were timed for 3 o'clock on Sunday for the Prius rally to be auctioned off. We were up on stage with one last ticket to sell, and finally somebody bought that ticket right 15 feet from where the barrel where the tickets were going to be turned and drawn out of. So I want to give a heads up to George for stepping up to the plate and doing that thing, and it cost him some money to do it. So, George, thank you. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, who won? You didn't announce who won the Prius.
Santa Monica, but okay. Did buy 3 tickets.
Okay, so he invested well.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm here to talk about the Rock to Rock Fun Run that we had on Saturday, October 4th. It was the first annual, and it's for the Morro Bay Community Foundation. We only had 54 participants, but it was really a neat thing. And we had a little bit of mist out there. Some people call it rain. We just call it mist here in Morro Bay. And there were still people that came out to run this. The Morro Bay Foundation... they've given out more than $113,000 to children in Los Osos, Morro Bay, Cayugas that participate in programs such as junior lifeguard, youth basketball, licensed child care, youth soccer, teen programs, etc. And I want to thank the people that sponsored this. There's quite an array of these people, but there are our community, the people in our community. That's Days In. the Galley Seafood Grill and Bar, Piano Blue Gallery, the Coffee Pot, As High As I Am, that's clothing, as you can see, Beans Roofing, Solomia, Lavish, Del Mar Elementary School PTA, Wavelengths, Sunshine Health Foods, Poppy, Jenny B. Realtor, Culligan Water, the Morro Bay Harbor Festival, and the Morro Bay Parks and Recreation Department. And on the results, the first was Frank Hutchinson, and I don't know the exact time, but he was first. And the first in the women's division, this is crazy, was Robin Oswald with a stroller and her baby. Can you believe that she was rocking? We had Todd Gailey from our fire department with his stroller. He came in, I think, sixth. Bill Murphy, also a fireman, came in 13th. And our own Mike Pond came in 39th, okay? Now, wait a minute, don't be laughing. This is incredible. That, you know, I mean, that's 2.5 miles down, 2.5 miles back. I mean, that shows what good shape this guy's in. He had to take a little break down there at the end, but he still did it, and I just want to commend him. And it was a lot of fun, and I want to thank everybody that worked on it, and I'm sure next year it'll even be bigger. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Keith.
Evening, Council. Ken Westerfeld, a few little items here. I do know that one of the local postal workers won the $3,000. I don't know his name, but he won $3,000, and then there was another drawing for $1,500. But more importantly, Bill Black wouldn't say anything. He was trying to help out with that, and it has turned into a family event. You've got young children and people here in the city who maybe just by themselves, and they come down and enjoy a great event. So thanks for the Rotary Club and the Peace Officers Association who put that together, along with many volunteers, Boy Scouts, and et cetera. One of the other things is I'd like to give kudos to Mike and Ron Myers, who donated their crane again this year to hoist up the great flag from the fire department, because our ladder truck is not in service at this time, but hopefully will be. And they did that last year also. And when they were asked this year, a day beforehand, there was no problem. They just came down. So I appreciate people who live in Morro Bay and like to do those things. And one last thing. Doesn't Joe Woods look good in a shirt and tie?
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. At your last meeting, by a 3-2 vote, the council approved the concept plan for a convention center on the Embarcadero. And there's a lot into that, and I won't get into many of the details, but I just want to talk about one thing. I want to talk about parking, okay? The conference center is proposed to have 400 attendees, but there's more than that. There's also going to be 11,000 square feet of retail business and restaurant downstairs, plus a bunch of boat slips out front, and, of course, all the employees for those. Now, the concept plan, which the council approved on its 3-2 vote, provides the following on-site parking. Zero. And it also removes 10 spaces that are in the street end right now between Roses and the Embarcadero Grill. So we have all those people coming down there, presumably, with zero on-site parking. But I'm told that we don't have to worry about it, because here's the editorial that I saw in the Sun Bulletin this week. And for those who didn't read it, I have taken one quote out of it. It says, the concept plan includes permanent off-site parking. Okay, so I thought, well, I'll look into that. Let's take a look, see. So I went and I got the lease. I've given all of you a copy of it. Here's what the so-called permanent off-site parking lease says. The term shall be for 5 years, renewable. However, either party has the right to terminate this lease by giving 30 calendar days written notice to the other party. That's a clue it may not be permanent. It states that the parking is for overflow parking from the proposed conference center and for no other purposes. Overflow from what parking? There is no parking at the conference center. And it can be used only with 2 weeks advance written notice and compatibility with other Morro Elementary tenants. I don't know what those uses are, but you got to get written notices and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Pardo.
Hi there. Kathy Wells, citizen of Morro Bay. Good evening. I'm here tonight to express my outrage over the city's decision to terminate the lease of the Outrigger restaurant. You, Mayor Peters, for reasons I'm unsure of, have demonstrated a clear dislike and a vengeance towards this elderly woman. Your use of legal niceties to pull the lease out from underneath a 78-year-old woman is despicable. You can smirk all you like. You know it is. A woman that has been here 50 years plus, who has worked her way up from waiting tables, who saved every hard dollar she had made. This is an elderly lady that, as a result of much hard work, was finally able to realize a dream of having her own business. This is a woman who put her entire life savings into a broken down waterfront restaurant and made it a success. And you want to pull her entire life out from under her for some pie in the sky conference center. It makes one wonder what your motives really are. What can be one's motives to take an elderly woman's life savings as well as ignoring the wants of the citizens? You are real big on using the words trust and respect, yet your actions clearly represent anything but trust and respect. Is this your politics as usual? The theft led by you to steal this elderly woman's business and life savings is unconscionable, not to mention putting 35 employees out of work in this already depressed economy. Hundreds of citizens of our community signed a petition against this so-called conference center that you want to position on our cherished waterfront. You blatantly ignored and turned a deaf ear of those you say that you represent. It makes me wonder what backdoor sweetheart deal you have going on with the owner of Roses and an out-of-town developer. This conference center cannot be described better than a Trojan horse. This city, under your direction, is literally planning to put an elderly woman out in the street penniless, and you think it's funny from the smile on your face. You are sad. You're pulling the rug right out from under this hardworking woman. You can choose to put all the legal spins on it you like. But to me, it's abuse. The content of your character simply represents one that is void of any moral fiber. Something definitely stinks here. Your poor decisions continue to affect all of us. Why is it that we citizens must continue to pay the consequences which stem from your clear inability to lead? As a footnote, in the last city council meeting, Mr. Grantham, you stated that if you did not vote for this conference center, you would need to take a shower. Well, I must say, I don't believe a simple shower would remove the stink that surrounds this whole deal. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Christy Hale. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the Recreation and Parks Commission. I just wanted to share our recommendation that you'll be reviewing tonight regarding smoking in our public parks. Our commission struggled with this one, batted it back and forth, looking at the personal freedoms of smokers as well as the health concerns for non-smokers in the park.
Calls from concerned citizens requiring more information. I think the mailer that was sent out was a good step. I'd encourage us to continue the update. The confusion that I'm hearing from residents is from the last shutdown, and the concern is that we do not potentially have a safe water supply. So as much as we can get the message out there that our water supply will be safe during the shutdown, I think that's a good thing. So continue that along the lines of Public Works. Really excited to see the pervious concrete demonstration project going in. It's going to be great to watch that in effect during this upcoming rainy season, and I hope we can do things to encourage further installations of such technologies as we move along. And then as well as the electric vehicle program. I think that's a great place for us to start. Let's take a look at how these operate, what they do as far as the needs of our staff and the city's maintenance crews. And if they're working well, I'd fully promote that we aggressively use these as we replace other vehicles down the road in the future. Along the lines of item D2, I will comment that it's as far as sustainability goes, one of the first philosophies of sustainability is local supply, and it would be a crime if our local fishing fleet could not supply fish to the community and the members within our community outside of the direct Morro Bay area. So we should do everything we can to support local control of the fishing areas and make sure we support those fishing communities. And, of course, congratulations on the budget. That's an excellent thing, and I think we should be very careful as we proceed because we want to make sure we continue this trend, but also realize we need to save and do everything we can in case we see further destabilization of our global economies and so on. So let's pat ourselves on the back, but continue the process and see if we can make this trend continue on as far as savings and surplus. So thanks again, and look forward to commenting on other items as we move through the agenda tonight.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. It seemed appropriate tonight, since the Youth Coalition was here, that we talked to you about 4-H. This Saturday,
Who are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
We know that we
yes, thank you. Carla Borchard, Morro Bay resident. And I have with me this evening Lacey and Emmy Haas. They are both members of the Morro Bay 4-H Club. Saturday, we just celebrated National 4-H Week in San Luis Obispo County. And Morro Bay 4-H Club has been here since the early 1960s. We've been in Morro Bay for over 45 years. We have approximately 50 members and 13 leaders. So we just want to tell you a little bit about 4-H and remind everybody that the 4-H Club was here in Morro Bay. We brought some information sheets that we want to share with you. So you want to take those up there to the lady in the purple right there? She'll give them to everybody. Thank you. We meet once a month out at the Morro Bay Grange Hall. And we have 4-H has over 1,000 projects. We don't have that many, obviously, here, but we have about 20 projects in our club. They range from community service. I'm having problems with that microphone. They range from community service.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing, Morro Bay citizen, and I wish to address, I think, A3. I applaud Park and Recs for seeking out an electric, all-electric vehicle, and I applaud you for giving them the funds to finance it. However, on the second vehicle, spending $32,000 in these very tough economic times, I question whether or not we need to spend that much for a hybrid truck. I'm wondering whether anybody has looked for a cheaper model. $32,000 is a little high. I'd like to see us save a little money and maybe try and find a different vehicle, a hybrid, but maybe not one that costs so much. So I applaud you all for going down this road. I think it's time we do it, but I also believe we should do it prudently and within our means. Thank you very much. Have a very good meeting tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, last but not least, I guess, Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. By the way, Councilman Kraven, the Rams won a game. we have an election coming up, and I've been hearing about all these things, but I haven't heard too much this evening about bringing businesses to Morro Bay. I mean, this is so important. We're so wrapped up in telling people how to build houses, what we call FAR, and that's fine. You passed it. FAR is out of the way. I know the city council, y'all work very hard. The city employees work hard, and the chief of police and the chief fire department work hard. I think that we should start thinking about what can we do for Morro Bay so we don't, so we have a city of Morro Bay. We don't have a county of Morro Bay. And I don't exactly know how this is going to work, but I know that there's a lot of good ideas on the table, and I think that with the new city council, whoever that may be, sit down, have committees, what can we do to think out of the envelope or think out of the toolbox, as they say nowadays. And I think it's so important because a friend of mine came from Sacramento, a little story, and he's never been to Morro Bay. He didn't even know Morro Bay existed except by name, and we went for a walk for 2 hours, and we stopped by Dockside and had a pitcher of beer and some oysters. We sat down, and he says, Gary, where did you find this place? This is beautiful. God, I wish I could retire here. And he lives in almost downtown Sacramento, which tells us a lot about our community and volunteers. And another issue that really, really has a, really bothers me is, and I'm looking, not looking for a pat on the back, but I volunteer in this, for this town. I belong to a lot of groups, and I love this city. I love everybody in this town. And these, some people come up here, and all they do is complain and bitch and complain and complain, but I never see them volunteering for anything. And I wish these people would wake up, quit complaining about the power plant, quit complaining about the fishermen, and all this stuff, and join our community and help this community, and let's bring some business in. I know you're all working hard. I know Bill Pierce was talking about
details of problems that people may have. Violet League had the outrigger lease. Rob, how many times did we extend that lease?
It wasn't extensions of leases. What we did is, and I'm trying to remember from memory, so, you know, I don't have it all in front of me.
Yeah.
But the lease originally was to end in 2010. We gave them an 8-year extension to 2018 if by 2000 and I think the first deadline was 2002, if they would do improvements to their property. They skipped that deadline. You gave them another deadline to 2004 and another deadline, I believe, till 2006. But again, my memory, I'd have to look at the complete history to know that. Extension after extension was not made. They didn't do the improvements to the property. So you told the council, directed staff to negotiate and bring it back to the end of 2010. And have the concept plan done in 1 year. They didn't make that deadline for the 1 year, and that's when you went out for an RFP on that project. So there was numerous extensions to do improvement on the property, but the lease ends in 2010. There's no termination of that lease. It's going to end in 2010 without termination.
Okay. The lease was not stolen from anyone. It was a lack of performance by the leaseholder. And so it was put out to bid, and the leaseholder submitted a bid as well. If you want to have the record of all of that, the dates and everything, it's available. Email me.
I have a complete history going back from the start of 1971 on the lease site. All of those facts can be backed up by the file that shows all the different letters and comments that were made on that file. So it is available in my office also if you'd like to see the history of that lease site.
So if any of you are still under the misconception that we stole that lease, please contact the city attorney and get the truth instead of an emotional response. As far as my sweetheart deal with the conference center owners, that's a bunch of, I'm not going to say it because it's not polite in public. It is absolutely false. I have never, ever entered any sort of a secret deal with anyone in all my years sitting in this position or on the council or on the planning commission before that. I never will, and I truly resent the idea that someone can accuse me of that in public. Absolutely false. Never, ever. In fact, I wouldn't even let the people in the conference center project give me more than the $99 in my campaign because I didn't want there to be any question of buying my vote or anything like it. Would have been really easy to put that vote off until after the election, wouldn't it? I didn't do that. The decisions that I make are what I see as the best for this city, and I will continue to make them that way. And as far as the smirk that she referred to, that's a smile. She doesn't do that often, so maybe she doesn't recognize it. We will now take a 5-minute break.
Mayor Peters, I was actually going to make a response as well, if you don't mind, with probably a little less investment. But one of the things that's odd about becoming a council member is that you start to begin to know the things you don't know as a resident.
Okay, now we're on break. There he is. Okay. We're on. Okay. Back to work in item B1. If there's going to be conversations out in the lobby, I'd appreciate you closing the door or.
Okay. Is there a reason why the light's not
Thank
on out
you.
There?
All right, this is a review of Municipal Code Ordinance 9.24 regarding the prohibition of smoking in city parks. And Joe, you have a report on this one?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Item B1 is brought to you as a review of City Municipal Code Ordinance 9.24, which is regarding the prohibition of smoking in city parks. You reviewed this ordinance back in 2006. And you took action which banned smoking on city beaches and also on T-piers, and attached are in your packet. The Recreation and Parks Commission did take some action in their August meeting. They recommended that the City Council ban smoking in all city parks and only permit parking in the parking lot. So smoking would be completely banned in parks that do not have parking lots, and that motion went 3-2. We did have two absent at that particular meeting. The motion that passed would completely ban smoking in the following parks: Anchor Park, Centennial, City Park, Monte Young Park, as well as Mariner Park, which is down in the Embarcadero. Smoking would be allowed in the parking lots at Del Mar, Lila Kaiser, Cloisters, North Point, Coleman, Tidelands, as well as Bayshore. The financial impact to date is we've not spent any general fund monies at all. We've just allocated staff time in writing reports and also meeting with the county as well as EBYC. In summary, the current city ordinance 9.24, smoking is prohibited unlawful on city beaches and tee piers. Furthermore, the state of California does prohibit smoking within 25 feet of play areas and tot lots. That being more stringent, this is the one that applies to us. Staff is recommending the City Council consider two options this evening in their review of Ordinance 9.24. One is take no action, leaving the existing ordinance in place and relying on the state regulations to apply in our city parks. And option two would be to consider a more stringent regulation than currently exists under state law. That concludes my report. I'd be open up for questions at this time.
Okay, questions for staff? Anyone? Rick?
I'd like to know what's the proposed penalty for someone that's caught smoking in a park?
The violation for smoking in a park within 25 feet of a play area is an infraction. And what's that? I don't think they go to jail.
Have we got that far?
We've never written a ticket for anybody smoking either on city beach or a tee pier or 25 feet from a play area, to my knowledge.
I'll follow up that very good question then, Mr. Grantham, with how do we enforce a rule like this?
We enforce it just like we do now. Basically, it's a passive enforcement from the police department. They're the ones who write the citations for violations of city ordinances. So right now it's a passive enforcement. It's basically if someone was to call and complain, then if resources were available from the police department, they would respond to that incident. Most likely the smoker will either be finished or gone or something in the situation has changed.
So in other words, we have nobody patrolling the parks looking for smokers or anything like that.
Correct. We do not have resources allocated directly towards smoking.
And if we were to do something like this, we would probably have to spend some money to create signage in the parks to say no smoking here and no smoking there. And
currently we have that ordinance on our city park signs that states the rules of the park.
Not be a city expense.
That's how I understand our earlier conversations with the county. We actually have brought up an idea through conversation of the new signs that Public Services has brought forth. We would try to do something very similar so we have some continuity within the city and a little bit more aesthetic sign that's in the parks. And then we would be a little bit try to be more proactive as far as prohibiting smoking and saying maybe something like, you know, respect other park users, no smoking, and then whatever we decided on this evening.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
First of all, let me say I too met with the folks, so I've had a one-on-one conversation regarding this particular item. And secondly, the question I have, I don't know if it's a city manager or city attorney, but because it is listed as an infraction, it's on our list of fines, fees, and so forth, is it not? I mean, because we're not bandying the total amount around here being an infraction, it's on our fee schedule. Anybody want to jump on that?
Well, infractions can be different amounts, so that would be one of the things we would look at is the exact amount. But infractions, depending on the infraction, can be a different amount for different infractions.
So
on
we
our
have
bail schedule.
So we have this should be written down somewhere if we have an existing law, right? Is for smoking.
For smoking where? On the beaches?
Well, what we have illegal now, say on the beaches.
Yes, we have an amount that's set.
I assume it would be roughly the same amount for smoking
yes,
in parks.
Yes, I would assume so.
Okay, so there is an amount.
Okay, any other questions? All right, this is a public hearing. We did hear from a lot of the young people earlier, but if anyone else would like to speak on this subject, please come forward.
Good evening, Noah Smuckler, and this is definitely a
interesting proposal, especially when it's presented by our youth and the community that they represent, families. I'm one that's always in support of personal freedoms, especially when they do not harm or are within reason, especially on private property. But in a case like this, where we have a clear, studied, potential health impact situation to sensitive and at-risk members of our community, I believe this ruling would make sense. I also have a concern, though, for the parking lot itself. I've participated in plenty of beach cleanups and parking lot cleanups, and you always find the butts, and the butt pollution is a major issue for the coast, for the quality of our watersheds and the waterways. And I think the butt-in program, where we have receptacles, and we make it clear that, yes, you're not allowed to smoke here, but this is the area for you to participate in this activity. So we are not criminalizing someone without giving them another option. And I think this, the butt-in program, is a way of really helping us designate that area so it's clear, it's obvious, and it's in the most fitting spot for the activity. So I would hope that we could pursue that within the parking lots. And really, I see this as an opportunity for community policing, where now that the rule has been made, it would give a family more of the ability to...
Hello, my name is Christina Lefebvre, and I'm a health education specialist with the County of San Luis Obispo Public Health Department in the Tobacco Control Program. I want to thank you all for letting us speak to you tonight. And I also would like to thank the Parks and Recs Commission, who have listened to us for many months, and the children as well, about their hopes for this policy. As many of you know, I've been working with the UBYC and the students of Del Mar to improve the health of the community by supporting their efforts to make their outdoor areas, such as parks, smoke-free for many months now. Over these months, I've had an opportunity to speak with many individuals in Morro Bay, both residents and tourists, and we have surveyed more than 350 individuals. Not computed were another 150 that we just surveyed this past or weekend before last at the Harbor Festival as well. These 350 individuals were old and young, and we have found that more than 80% of these people... support smoke-free outdoor areas. Often when I talk to people in the community, and these types of concerns have been raised here as well, people are concerned about personal rights, and we appreciate that. And they often ask, what about the smokers? Well, 87% of SLO County residents don't smoke. There is no constitutional right to smoke, but individuals do have the right to breathe clean air and be free of harm. There are many people in this community who have respiratory problems. This includes children and adults with asthma, individuals with decreased lung function, and many people who are just allergic to smoke. These people, which are similar in number to the amount of smokers in the county, about 13%, are protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act, so I hope that you'll consider them. They have a right to access public accommodation and should be able to use these parks free of any harm from secondhand smoke. Recently, New Tex data, which is a California Healthy Kids data, has also been released. It is a survey throughout all of San Luis Obispo schools, and they have shown that youth smoking is unfortunately on the rise. Youth smoking is a community problem. Many of these kids, if they're addicted before they're 18, they will be smokers for life, and it will shorten their lifespans. By enacting policies such as these, research has shown that you can reduce youth smoking by up to 40%, which is one of the things that I believe the Rec and Park Commission were looking at, was that they would really like to send a message to our youth that tobacco use is unhealthy and it's not acceptable in our parks where we're meant to be doing healthy behaviors. As we talked about, it's supposed to be a passively enforced law. Many of the tourists that we have surveyed, and there have been over 100 cities in the state here that have already gone tobacco-free in their parks. Many of your tourist people who come from Fresno, Monterey, also Bakersfield, their parks are already smoke-free. So educating them is not really necessary because they already know that most parks are smoke-free and expect your parks to be smoke-free. I know that I've spoke with the Parks and Recs director, and we do have some money for signage and receptacles and education. So I hope you'll consider this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Peter Risley, a citizen of Morro Bay, a resident of Morro Bay. What a wonderful opportunity the City Council has to strike a blow against tobacco addiction. I highly recommend that you do this. Just a little side issue. It's a major issue what tobacco has done to our country. Why did our country bring slaves to this nation? Tobacco. Tobacco is one of the most harmful substances and has done tremendous damage to our country. Please don't smoke. If you're addicted, get off of that stuff because it's really harmful. Please make a blow against tobacco. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nita Kenyon, EBYC member. I really commend the Recreation and Parks Commission for their recommendation to make the parks smoke-free. I would really like to add that I am not in favor of making the parking lots a smoking area. I think that really to have that be a smoking area defeats the purpose. The smoke and the butts will really go into the smoking, the parks, and I know where I live, the butts and the smoke, because of the wind in our lovely area, really drifts into the park. And I just would like you to consider, as you consider this recommendation, to go all the way and to make all the parks smoke-free totally, and not just the ones that don't have parking lots. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Any additional questions, or you want to start with comments? Who would like to begin? Melody?
I'll start, sure. First of all, I'm going to just put out here that I smoked like a fiend from age 11 until 34. A couple of packs of Marlboros a day, and I was good to go. Finally quit 24 years ago, and so that should make me an avid proponent of getting everybody else to quit. But I'm not. About a week ago, I walked into a smoker's house and just about gagged because I'm also an asthmatic. And I had to go out and continue my talk on the front porch because I simply could not breathe. So I understand the danger of being around secondhand smoke in intense situations like indoors. I don't out of doors. This is another one of those things that appeals. You know, I'm kind of a complicated political person. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm a decline to state as my registration because I'm a Democrat sometimes and a Republican. But my libertarian right now has got her mind going. And this is about personal freedoms. And so I see that the state law already prohibits smoking within 25 feet of playgrounds and tot lots. And I actually go to playgrounds now with my granddaughter. And I go to the Atascadero Park over there. And, there's a playground and a tot lot and a swing center and everything. And the state law says none of us swinging our kids or this passive enforcement where you're hoping that somebody will call, and then as the Reagan Parks Director says, call, and by the time the police get there, if they can go cover that, and our police department's constantly saying, we can't cover everything. You know, they can't respond to meth lab reports, and I think that's a little bit more important. So I those are all my terribly negative comments. I mean, I do want to say if any of the parents have their kids listening at home, and I hope they do, to see how this all turns out, I just love getting those children involved. I love them coming down here to talk about rules and regulations and how the city operates, but not on this particular issue. But I think that shouldn't dispel any of their notion of coming down here making public comment. That was the most wonderful sight there, to see all those young people just coming up one by one and making their comments, as nervous as some of them were to go ahead and talk like that. It gets them involved in all kinds of issues, not just smoking, but there's all kinds of issues for young kids to talk about. You know, refurbishing the skateboard board park, or opening the teen center longer hours, or providing after-school programs, access to Lila Kaiser and the rec programs. Lots of things need to be worked on here with youth. But I wouldn't consider a more stringent regulation.
Okay, Rick.
Well, you know, everybody knows smoking is bad. It causes fires. It causes disease. It does all these horrible things. But when I see the lovely lady from the school say a thing like, well, we want to take it a step further, take it a step further, those kind of things scare me. It makes lawbreakers out of otherwise law-abiding citizens. I think it's very restrictive. Smokers are taxpayers too, and they pay park and rec fees just like everybody else. And there's something inherently not right or fair about it. We do have laws on the books, as Melody said, that keeps the use of tobacco 25 feet from a play area. Also, I think when you go making ordinances or laws that are not enforceable, it sends a very negative message. We need to enforce the laws on the books. I think it would be a very easy and a very popular thing to go along and just say, yeah, let's not do it, since 87% of the people, adults, don't smoke. But I feel I have to stand up for that 13% that do, for their personal freedoms and rights. We all need to be responsible citizens, and, you know, everybody should know you don't smoke around kids with those growing lungs. It's a very negative thing to do, but so is taking personal freedoms from folks.
Bill?
Well, that's an interesting question. With the number of people who don't smoke and really the lack of facilities in parks for people to dispose of their cigarette butts and things, you kind of are asking for butts to be left in parks. I can see...
No, are pretty responsible about taking their butts and sticking them in some kind of container in their pocket. Not that everyone does. I did note that the votes for, and let me disclose also that I spoke with the tobacco woman and the woman counselor from the school. So let me go ahead and reveal that as ex parte. That if you look at the vote that the Parks and Rec Commission took last, it was close. They went back and forth with three different motions. Do we ban it altogether? Do we allow it just an extended footage? Do we do the parking lot, which came up to be their compromise? And it was 3-2, 3-2, 3-2, back and forth, back and forth. So my feeling is that even they themselves weren't real strong one way or the other about this. I am sympathetic to Mr. Grantham's comments about minority rights. Certainly as a majority non-smokers, we still have to protect those. This is not a confined space. It is out of doors. I'm very respectful of the 25 feet. If we would like to extend that, I'm willing to extend that. I don't think I'm willing to ban smoking in the parks. I think, you know, people have a right to enjoy the out of doors, whether they smoke or not. So I would entertain an extension of the distance or leave it as is.
I'm impressed with the cities that have done this and have totally banned it in their parks. It's certainly what I would like to do, but I also appreciate what everyone else up here has said, and I do know that it's difficult to, especially in an outdoor area, to tell people they can't smoke. As far as enforcement, I think that rules like this are often self-enforcing, where if the smoker sees the sign, they know, okay, I'm not supposed to be here, another place I can't be. And I think that does happen. It also allows other people who are in the area to be able to point out to them, see that sign, you're not supposed to do that. So I think that tends to take care of itself for the most part.
if people are conscientious. I guess I would go along with the Park and Recs Commission's suggestion about the parking lots and have it not allowed in the parks that don't have parking lots. That gives people options. The ones that are most used for major events and public and games and things like that would be allowing the smoking there. And so I think that I would probably go with their recommendation. So we have a bunch of different opinions up here. Somebody want to try a motion?
Yeah, I move that we take no action leaving the existing ordinance in place and rely on state regulations for public park applications.
Second.
Okay, any discussion?
I'd ask the motion and seconder for a friendly amendment. Would it be that we could also ask either the Parks Commission or staff to look at putting in the butts in type of containers at our parks? So, or for those that don't have it. So it's an unspoken message to people that here's where you drop your butts. You don't take them into the park or when you bring them back out.
I could amend my motion to include, you okay with this, Bridget? To take option one and add to that, that at the end.
Amendments. Yes.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Okay, 3-2, Pearson Peters opposed. Okay, there we go. And we will move on from smoke to fire. Our next item is consideration of a resolution of intent to contract with CAL FIRE pending acceptance of a contract. And Chief Pond.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight we're going to be, the staff is recommending that the City Council approve resolution of intent to contract with CAL FIRE. Approval of this resolution will allow the City to proceed with contract negotiations to determine the actual costs of CAL FIRE providing contract services. While I'm here to make the presentation tonight, please keep in mind that Chief Jenkins is in the audience and he'll be available later if you do have any questions. Chief Jenkins, if you'll, there he is. We've got him out there in the audience, and I think we have several other chiefs and ex-chiefs that have shown up out there. Well, first, I want to start off with a real brief history and then talk a little review of CAL FIRE, just so everybody understands what we're talking about here. The Morro Bay Firefighters Association was the initiating entity for looking at CAL FIRE. They sent a letter of requesting that the city establish a committee to look at CAL FIRE and research the viability of a contract. The firefighters felt a contract with CAL FIRE may be a way to help the city achieve the objectives of the Morro Bay Fire Department 5-year strategic plan. Some of the objectives in that plan were to increase on-duty staffing to 4 firefighters a day and open a second station. Both of these things were to help reduce response times to North Morro Bay and better deal with the simultaneous and back-to-back calls. In response to the firefighters' request, the City Council established the ad hoc CAL FIRE committee, advisory committee, and it had its first meeting in December of 2007. That committee met quite often, as those members here on the council can recall, and we put together a final report to the City Council that was delivered in May. The final report essentially stated that the committee felt there was merit in investigating the CAL FIRE contract further. And this was mainly due to the potential for long-term and future savings that was demonstrated in our investigation. The committee also discussed a lot of other issues that were not necessarily specific to cost. Many of these issues were again discussed during the public workshop that was held on July 12th. Chief Matt Jenkins did a presentation at that workshop and covered a lot of the aspects of what a CAL FIRE contract entails and how those work. I want to review a few of those issues that were discussed then and with our committee. When you look at a CAL FIRE contract, what they're doing is providing personnel services. They provide the full-time employees for the daily operations of the fire department. But besides doing that, they take over a lot of the administrative services. CAL FIRE assumes full responsibility for the employees, so what that means is they're doing all the scheduling, the evaluating, the hiring, the firing, training, and they do all the negotiations with the employee groups, which is the CDFEA, and they negotiate at the state level. There's also a potential reduction of finance department effort. Instead of the finance department dealing with the fire department every 2 weeks, cutting checks for all the employees and tracking work hours and all those things, CAL FIRE does all that, and the city cuts one on or two of them are gone. That person coming in may not necessarily know Morro Bay as well as them. CAL FIRE also offers training resources, fire prevention resources, and they have a large pool of engines that are available to use in reserve status. If we had an engine go down and need repairs, they do have engines that could fill as a backup. CAL FIRE also, in contracting with CAL FIRE, CAL FIRE also takes over fire dispatch services. Police dispatch would still remain. They'd still need to be there for police services and Ann Harbor Department issues and public works. But when a fire call comes in, it would be transmitted to the Emergency Communication Center in San Luis. The positives we see there just off real briefly is Morro Bay dispatchers would see some relief in the duties that they're currently doing and be able to focus elsewhere. Fire traffic does not have to compete with local police traffic. So we get more of a priority communication. One of the negatives may be that calls, because they have to be transferred to the ECC, there may be several seconds lost in that transmission, and we're always trying to save time. We do have a computer link to dispatch, to the dispatch in the ECC, so the system we have right now is fairly instantaneous, but until we're actually doing it on a day-to-day basis, it would be hard to say exactly what time difference that would be. Our employees would also experience some differences, some changes. CAL FIRE employees work 16 more hours per week than the Morro Bay firefighters. Ours work a 56-hour work week. CAL FIRE works a 72. While this may mean more time away from the family on a typical work week, it does translate into additional income and retirement benefits for the employee. That can be pretty enticing. Post-retirement medical insurance benefits are available after 10 years of service with CAL FIRE, and it progresses from 50% to 100% after 20 years. They provide opportunities to the employees for specialized assignments, promotion, opportunities to move elsewhere in the state, and employees through the contract can also remain working here in Morro Bay. Some things that are not typically covered by a CAL FIRE contract include things like facilities. The stations remain the property and possession of the city. CAL FIRE does not take those over. The city provides the money to maintain them and replace them. Same thing with fire apparatus. The engines do not become the property of CAL FIRE. They remain the property of the city. They remain in the city and are just operated by CAL FIRE employees. And the city must put money aside to replace those vehicles over time. The reserve firefighter program remains with the city. CAL FIRE would administer the program. They provide the training. But as far as the employees themselves, they would still be Morro Bay, City of Morro Bay employees and paid directly by the City of Morro Bay. And things like apparatus, maintenance, and fuel either can go through their organization or the city can provide those services outside of CAL FIRE. If you go through CAL FIRE, anything that is included within their contract would have that additional 9.78% administrative fee. So the city saves money if you don't include all those little detail items within the contract. All things considered, staff believes both CAL FIRE and Morro Bay Fire can provide the level of service. With CAL FIRE, the contracts are for the level of service the city desires. So the city would establish its desired level of service. CAL FIRE would provide us the contract numbers for that. CAL FIRE numbers contracts are not to exceed contracts. So if, and I'll just pull a number here, if they say it's going to cost us $2.2 million for the level of service the city wants, in that calendar year, the contract would not exceed that $2.2 million. If the actual cost due to staffing levels came in at 2.1, the city would be billed that $2.1 million. Traditionally, the low COLAs that the CAL FIRE receives are the main reason that the committee thought there could be potential savings over time. A 16-year history of CAL FIRE, when we looked at their cost of living increases, the 1.4% annually annual COLAs averaged over that 16-year period. If you project that 10 years into the future, you start seeing a separation between what Morro Bay Fire pays now and what CAL FIRE would be potentially costing 10 years from now. Though we know the past, and looking at those COLA numbers, it's easy to see what happened and use those to try and predict the future. But we don't have a crystal ball. We won't know those for sure. And so there is some risk to what might happen in the future. In a contract, the city has little control over the future increases that the state may pass down because the city does not do the negotiating for the compensation packages of the firefighters. The state negotiates with CDFEA on pay and benefits, and then those would be transferred down to the city. While that may be a risk for the city, you can kind of temper that with some feedback we've received from Pismo Beach and Los Osos. Both of those agencies have experienced fairly flat contracts and have had some stability within their contracts and have not experienced any spikes in cost related to their contracts. So the city will not know the exact cost without first passing the resolution of intent and completing contract negotiations for options addressing the desired level of service. It will be at the point, if the city passes that resolution of intent and after the negotiations, that we will truly be able to do an apple-for-apple comparison. It is in the interest of determining actual negotiated contract costs that staff recommends approval of Resolution 6208. If the resolution is not approved, staff will continue status quo operations of the fire department while continually searching for effective ways to improve this important service. Now I just want to thank you for your attention, and I'd like to turn it back to council, remind you that Chief Jenkins and I are both here and available to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions for staff? Rick?
Good evening, Chief. In regards to mutual aid, the way it works now, you get a request for a mutual aid. You make that decision, what engine, how many people, and who they are that go.
Correct.
Now, under CAL FIRE, we get a mutual aid situation. Does the local, say you or who's ever in charge, does the local person in Morro Bay make that decision still? Who and how many people go on?
Automatic and mutual aid would both continue as it does right now. I wouldn't foresee any changes. We have automatic aid agreements with our neighbors to provide service when they need help. So if Los Osos has a structure fire, they're sending their resources there, and we're sending an engine there as well to help. If we have a structure fire here, we're sending our resources, and CAL FIRE through Los Osos or Station 11 in Cayucas are sending us resources to provide us assistance. So there's that give and take that occurs on a fairly regular basis. If we're talking about mutual aid outside the region, outside of our operational area, which is San Luis Obispo County, those requests come from OES to the operational area coordinator. The operational area coordinator for San Luis County is Chief Matt Jenkins at the County Fire, CAL FIRE, San Luis County Fire. When those requests come in, such as they did today, our OES engine was requested through that system. We were notified that our engine was needed down at the fire in Porter Ranch. And so the request came to Morro Bay. We have that OES engine. The duty officer that's at the station, which happened to be myself, and the captain on duty, we identify who was in the rotation for staffing that engine, contacted those people, they staffed the engine, and we covered behind where needed, and those people left. Fortunately, we had three full-time employees on duty today. Our MOU with the Firefighters Union currently is if we can drop down to two full-time and fill back with a reserve. So that's what we did for the rest of the shift. Captain Olson went out on the OES engine as the captain, and his position wasn't filled with a full-time person. It was filled with a reserve. So those personnel in the engine are going to go out to the fire. They're going to work that fire and come back to the city. And because it's I think it's an LNF. It's a Los Angeles National Forest, I believe. It'll be a reimbursable fire. So all the time for those employees and any employees covering their shifts back at home are reimbursed at a time and a half rate. And that money would come back to the city of Morro Bay to cover those costs. Now, if the personnel costs are CAL FIRE employees, let's say we had a contract with CAL FIRE, their employees are going out, and those costs are being generated, the reimbursement money would go back to CAL FIRE, would be my assumption. And if you want to nod your head yes or respond, Matt? So we're talking his personnel, they're his employees. If they go out and do anything over and above what Morro Bay is contracted for, that money would be reimbursed to them because they're paying that cost to those employees.
Can I just do a little follow-up on that piece? So if this was under the CAL FIRE system, would our reserves necessarily get the backup position, or would another CAL FIRE person get it and our reserves would be out? Or would we have to put that in the contract that we wanted our reserves to backfill?
I don't know all of CAL FIRE's rules and regulations. I know their union directs entity.
And my concern...
It's a paperwork issue.
My concern was for the reserve person who did the backfill today. Would he necessarily be called in to do the backfill if this was under CAL FIRE? Or would a CAL FIRE cover instead of a reserve?
That's a level of service question. If the city decides its level of service is to always have three full-time firefighters and all paramedics, that's what CAL FIRE will give us a price for. If the city allows CAL FIRE to have two full-time employees 50% of the time and fill back with a paid call firefighter during that 50% of the time, that can be written into the contract. So all... there's a variety of options that could be written in there, and they all have different costs attached to it. And the city, you know, in our five-year strategic plan, through our workshops, through everything, we've identified four as being our optimum level of service at this time. And to have four full-time firefighters with a minimum of two being paramedics, if that were our desired level of service, CAL FIRE would give us a price to provide that as well. So if those four left on an engine, CAL FIRE and Matt would be committed to filling back with four firefighters and two of those being paramedics.
Okay, Rick.
Just one real fast question. You can give me a yes or no. Does the city currently have the expertise to do all the needed maintenance, required maintenance on the new vehicles that we now have and we're thinking of getting, or... do you find that they need to go to CAL FIRE for these kind of things?
We do a lot of the typical change the oil and minor engine repairs and things at City Yard. Our mechanics are quite skilled and can do a lot of that work. Change out a turbocharger, an alternator. All those things are done in-house. Anything more substantial than that, when we start tearing engines apart, rebuilding... springs, we've broken the big springs on the engines before. Those type of things we ship out to a professional diesel repair company, Brummett Diesel, or some other company on either in San Luis or Santa Maria.
Okay, any other questions? All right, this is a public hearing. Oh, I'm sorry.
I have several questions, actually. Sorry. So, Chief Pond, it says on page 4 of your staff report for tonight, you're referring to the management partner's recommendations. And it says, alternative 2, request a proposal from CAL FIRE to provide the lowest possible level of service, but staff recommends against considering a contract at the lowest possible level. So when I was on this ad hoc committee, it was I was often talking about, you know, four people on or three people on, and what will we ask CAL FIRE for? So is there... a stipulation from CAL FIRE that they would want to have four on? Must we go for the four on for this contract negotiation?
No. The level of service is purely at the discretion of the city council and the city. However, they will not drop below their minimums, and their minimum is, I believe, two full-time firefighters per unit.
That's two per unit, so how many would we need on?
Appropriate unit. It's not an ideal situation to have a single person responding to an emergency call. And there are some incidents where they cannot take action. You know, structure fire, one person's not going to do much, but they are going to call for appropriate resources. They'll do a size up and identify hazards and do some initial work. However, if it's an infant not breathing, there are things that one person can do to help have a positive outcome.
Perhaps I could ask Chief Jenkins to come up for maybe a follow-on to this to get his opinion, and then a second question for Chief Jenkins. And thank you for attending tonight and for all the time you've given to this process.
Oh, sure. I probably need to state my name for the record.
Yes,
I assume.
Please. Thank you.
Okay. Matt Jenkins, Chief Cal Fire, County Fire.
Thank you. And then, so I was wondering what your response would be. In contract negotiations with Cal Fire, we currently staff three on and then use reserves to kind of backfill. Would you be comfortable? Do you think that when we go to California for this negotiation, we go to them with this plan to go for three on, with two on a vehicle and one sitting at the station, I guess. What is your opinion of that? Should we go for the four? Or?
Well, I think it really, from what I've seen working with the ad hoc committee, probably the best thing if we begin to work on this process would be to build a level of service document that reflects exactly what you're doing today, and then we can work from there. And it'll be very easy once we work through the personnel portion to determine costs, and then you'll be able to adjust that level of service document, and the cost will follow that, and it'll be much easier for the council to determine the level of service they desire and exactly how much that would cost. We do certainly have models. Pismo Beach uses a model very similar to what you're talking about at their main station, Station 64 in the city of Pismo Beach. That station is staffed with two permanent employees plus a reserve firefighter every day. There's three people on there, one of them being a reserve, and that was their choice to do that, and we were fine with doing that.
Okay, and then my second question is about this administrative fee.
Yes.
Because I think it's in here is 9.85% on the contract, and so if you got a $2 million contract, that's a chunk of change. I was wondering, how is that determined? Who determines that administrative fee, and what affects how it goes up or down?
Well, it's determined in Sacramento, and they look at the overall cost of providing the services covered by the fee, and you know, in a contract, or actually we call them cooperative fire protection agreements, they're covering all of the personnel and finance, all of the labor issues. We do, you know, well, purchasing. It kind of covers all that overhead for us managing those additional employees. As the state, we're not allowed to make a profit on a cooperative agreement, but we're not allowed to subsidize a local agency. So we charge exactly what it costs. And they adjust that fee every year based on, history from the past year. I came from local government as well. I
came up with the smarty pants idea that state employees don't get these COLAs that city employees do. Because we don't get raises. But that whole savings of $1 million relies on the idea of giving a 3.8% annual increase to Morro Bay Fire employees. That has to suppose that in order to see the savings over the 10-year period, right?
Correct. We took the 16-year average of Morro Bay Fire Department COLAs, mm-hmm. And the 16-year average of Cal Fire COLAs, and then we projected both of those 10 years into the future, and that's where, you know, we started seeing that separation.
Okay. And then it's also true that our employees make more per hour than a Cal Fire employee does, so they would make more money simply because they're working more overtime.
It's correct that some of our employees would have an hourly rate that is more than some of the current Cal Fire salaries per position.
Mm-hmm.
In those instances where that was true, those people would essentially be red circled and not get any pay raises until CAL FIRE caught up, and at that point then they would progress together.
Which is a long time at 1.4% annually.
It could be.
Could be a long time. Then in that same paragraph, the second paragraph on page 5, you say these figures only address cost of living adjustments on pay and do not necessarily reflect changes in total compensation. So that refers to like health, retirement, those kinds of things?
Correct. Health, PERS, longevity pay, pay incentives. None of that was looked at or included, and that's where we'd have to enter into this agreement and look further into what the total costs would be.
And then in the FAQs, frequently asked questions that are attached to this, it does say that if we contract with CAL FIRE and we need reserves, the City of Morro Bay pays for the reserves.
That's correct.
Okay, but as I recall, that we don't pay them very much, unfortunately.
We're going to be talking about that, I believe, at the next meeting.
That would be a good idea. Also in the FAQs, it talks about new uniforms. Is that an expense for the city, these new uniforms? Or are they just going to put a CDF or CAL FIRE thing on there?
Well, currently the MOU that we have, the city pays for uniforms. So our employees don't get any clothing allowance or anything. I believe CAL FIRE provides their employees a clothing allowance. Is that correct, Matt?
Okay. And then finally, one of the things that has concerned me is this rotation of, should we decide to go to CAL FIRE finally, the rotation of our own firefighters out to other CAL FIRE locations. All of them have to be rotated, true, into other CAL FIRE locations to learn the CAL FIRE environment and their culture.
I believe CAL FIRE's learned a lot over the years in contracting with agencies, and they've learned that it works best to take a portion of the employees from that new organization, move them out into CAL FIRE facilities to work alongside CAL FIRE employees, learn their paperwork, learn their methods, learn their everything that's CAL FIRE's way, mm-hmm. computer reporting programs and paperwork and everything else. And there probably would be times that, you know, if the contract showed me staying in Morro Bay where I would actually have to go in and learn some of these things mm-hmm. and accompany another chief somewhere in the organization to get a full understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Follow up on that question, but we can request you as the chief to stay here in Morro Bay. That can be part of our contract request.
Can be part of the contract.
Okay. Right.
Let's let Matt answer that question.
Okay.
Yeah, let me speak to that if I might. Don't take this the wrong way. I can't agree to anything in the contract that usurps my ability as the fire chief to manage my employees as I see fit. However, certainly that is exactly the typical model. That's exactly what I did when I was the chief of Cameron Park Fire Department. When I came across to CAL FIRE, I became the battalion chief with the Cameron Park Battalion. It makes every bit of sense in the world. If we enter into a cooperative agreement, we want to do a good job. And to do that, we need that local knowledge. We need that expertise that's been gained here as a local municipal department. And we need those folks to train other CAL FIRE employees in the county so that actually you increase your depth of people that are familiar with the city. And that's our goal. Obviously, you know, my intent would be to keep Chief Pond very involved in Morro Bay. That would be in our best interest to do that.
Okay, now clarify that for
and you
me,
can,
please.
You can request anything. There are some things I can't write into the contract, but certainly I am responsive to the governing bodies that I report to, as is every fire chief.
So we cannot request that be part of our contract.
I can't write something into the contract that would give the city control over state employees. The city can't dictate where state employees work or who gets to work here. That's my prerogative as the fire chief, to manage my employees based on operational need. You can certainly express your desires as far as obviously you want to have a chief working with you locally that knows your city and works cooperatively with you and I'm very willing to listen to that and manage the department in a way that you would be pleased with.
Okay. I have Rick and I have Betty.
Okay. It's a deal breaker then. One thing that Melody brought up a minute ago was uniforms, and I think she was trying to get to expense. But one thing that we didn't or isn't in here is the fact that Cal Fire uses a certain type of self-contained breathing apparatus, which is different from the models that we have in Morro Bay. And I think we're talking about $60,000 that would have to be spent at city expense to convert over to what Cal Fire uses. So that's just something that is not in here that we need to know.
You want me to speak to that, Mike? Yeah. Well, we would, that is the case, that you do use a different type of breathing apparatus than we're currently using for Cal Fire County Fire employees. And we would like standardization.
That you had to have two per truck or unit or however you define that, and that if we were going to go to two stations, then we'd have to have two at each, and that would be the minimum. Is that right?
That's correct. Our minimum staffing for apparatus is in a cooperative agreement is two.
Okay.
The state actually staffs their engines with a minimum of three, and the last 2 years with four.
Okay.
But in a cooperative agreement, we agree to two.
You would go to two rather than three and three?
Well, no, that's up to the city. If you
okay.
want additional personnel beyond our minimum, that's your prerogative, and we can give you a price for that.
So if we did not open our north station and we kept it here where we had the two people, and then we split it because we have the third person for the simultaneous, you would keep that same way of doing things, or would you actually not have to have four out of one station? That's what I thought I heard at the workshop.
I would suggest that we're not comfortable with sending a single firefighter alone to incidents.
Right. Okay.
It's a dangerous scenario. Firefighters are given to action, and
mm-hmm.
Oftentimes you're putting them in a compromising situation.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take action at their own risk. So while if you had three, we would probably recommend those three respond on the same vehicle, or you augment with a reserve, perhaps. That's what Los Osos does. They have three permanent employees on, and then they staff with an additional reserve so that they can respond two pieces of apparatus out of the same station.
So it would have a minimum of four people on at one time, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Yeah,
if you
okay.
want, I mean, if that's the desired level,
sure.
you could have as few as two and as many as you desire or can afford.
But not three. It sounds like it has to go from two to four.
Well,
is,
you can have
point.
Three, but I would suggest that they all three respond on the
because
same
the
piece
three,
of apparatus.
Three can't run two engines.
Well, while we have three, our desired level is four.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this would become mandatory, it sounds like, in our contract, because that's what's comfortable or your rule. Okay. Thanks.
Correct.
Okay, I have a question, too. Wait, excuse me, Chief Jenkins. I think it's probably going to come
here.
To you, although I'll ask it of Chief Pond first. One of the advantages, I understand, of going with Cal Fire is the medical retirement, medical coverage after retirement. Is that part of our contract? Is that something that we absorb as part of our contract as more and more firefighters retire that gets heavier and heavier? How does that work?
No, that's actually not a cost to the city. The only way that can be a cost to the city is if you buy previous years for your employees. Some contracts have done that where the community has already had that benefit for their employees and they've been putting money away for it, and then they will purchase years of service for their employees before they transition to the state. Typically, in an agreement, if that benefit has not been provided, then the employees earn that as state employees. So with 10 years of service as a state employee, and this is actual, and I have to clarify, because if your employees transition to Cal Fire, they bring all the years of service that they have with Morro each year.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? This is a public hearing, so anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward.
Good evening, Mayor, honorable members of the City Council. My name is Ariane Leiter. I'm here in the capacity as Union President of Local 3725, Morro Bay Firefighters. First of all, I'd like to thank the mayor for all her hard work on the ad hoc committee on emergency services. In addition, a thank you to Melody Demerit and Bill Pierce for their work on the ad hoc Cal Fire Advisory Committee. Also, thank you to the Friends of the Firefighters and anyone else who has worked on issues pertinent to the fire department and the community. We appreciate any and all time you've spent. I would like to remind you that the Firefighters Union, comprised of the full-time suppression personnel, voted to go forward with the investigative process. We hope that you will vote to continue this process so that we can get more information on the true cost of a CAL FIRE contract to the city of Morro Bay. We feel that there is potential for increased service at a lower cost. With the economy in dire straits and the fiscal future of the city uncertain, we would like you to explore this as an option. We hope to avoid future layoffs in public safety or any other city departments. Thank you for your time. And I'd like to address one more issue while I'm up here completely. I've been listening to the conversation about the staffing issue, and I have to say that I'd like to express concern on my behalf, and many people on the fire department now do not like splitting the crew into two units. We abide by our chief's wishes at the moment, but we do not all agree with it, and we do not all feel that it's a safe situation to split people into two and one. So as far as that goes, I personally think that would be a big advantage to go from one person on a unit to two people on a unit. It's not, we never know what we're going to. It can sound very benign and not always be that way, and the city's been very lucky so far, but that's just off the cuff. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Councilor Ken Vesterfelt also was a member of the ad hoc committee, and want to thank everybody involved for being able to be on that ad hoc committee. And just a couple of points, being out in the community, and people have known that I've been in the ad hoc community, or excuse me, the ad hoc committee, the two most important questions were, is that going to be our fire equipment? Of course it will be. And will it remain our staff, our boys, as they call them? And of course, people want to remain here, will remain here, is my understanding. We consider them people that we know, and it's no different. And I firmly believe that the intent would be to have Chief Pond remain here. But no different than when our own Chief Jones left. Nobody wanted to see him leave. Chief Pond was able to be the fire chief and has done a wonderful job, and I know all of you are proud of him. So it's not like us and a lot of information that Chief Jenkins will bring back to the City Council. And I'm hoping that everyone who wants to learn about this, that they will ask questions and get involved in when it comes back to the council to learn exactly what comes forth from, as they say, the horse's mouth with all this information. And again, it will be up to the citizens and to the City Council for the level of fire service. They've already demonstrated in their voting that they want to have a higher level of service, and I'm sure they're willing to pay for that. So thank you for your time, and I know that hopefully you will accept that we need this proposal, and we'll have to take a look in several months down the road from this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, Noah Smuckler, Morro Bay, and I'd like to start by saying that I feel strongly in regards to the necessity and the essentialness of our local fire departments and the services that they provide, particularly in emergency medical response. And I think as a city, we owe it to the departments when they make a request like this to at least investigate. So I certainly support and endorse the concept of proceeding with this proposal and requesting a concept and continuing the process here. Of course, that will lead to further questions and dialogue, which I'm excited to continue participation with. And along those lines, I have some questions and some concerns. Those really are mostly in regards to the potential and the stability of the long term of this contract. And it's obvious that once we do sign into this contract, it will be very challenging for the city if for some reason down the road we find the loss of local control is not of value to us, that it will be really challenging for us to return and rebuild our locally staffed fire departments. And that's a challenge. So we need to be very careful as we proceed here. And one of the things that I've been able to appreciate the most with my time touring the department and listening to these presentations is the value that the city receives from our emergency, from our reserve patrols and our paid call firefighters. So, to me, that is of great value, and I'm glad to hear that that program could continue. At the same time, I think if we proceed into the future and we have a level of service that the community is committed to and really feels is the best for our community, and the cost that is projected by the state is above our means, would there be a potential for us in a time of uncertain futures financially, would there be a potential for us to look at the option of a volunteer component to help augment our paid staff and our paid firefighters? So that's a question that I have, and I know because of where we're looking financially with the state, we need to be ready to ask all questions. I know that volunteer fire departments are being phased out at this moment, but we are proceeding into unknown territory, and I think that call to action to our qualified citizens needs to be an option that could. Thank you, and this is an important situation for the city, and
thank
I
you.
Know we're going to do a good job.
Anyone else? Now there's a familiar face.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Jeff Jones. For the record, I'm a resident of Morro Bay and I'm a former fire chief in town. Now, I urge you tonight to pass this resolution. I do that because I believe very strongly in the Morro Bay Fire Department. I worked here for 24 years. I was the fire chief here for 13. This is a great department, but they need your help. We looked at this in the mid-90s, and it didn't happen for many reasons. But one of the hopes at the end of that process was that the council would help right-size this department, and we would staff stations in the north, and we would add a fourth person on, and all those hopes were discussed, and none came to fruition. The problem we have is money. Our city is, you know better than I, the challenge that we face attracting dollars into this town, whether they're tourist dollars or sales tax dollars or any other revenue stream. The fire department is a participant in the general fund. They don't have the ability to go out and generate return on investment or anything else. They're somewhat like an insurance policy. You know, I don't know a person that gets excited when they get to sign that check for their policy coverage. But no one wants to be caught without it if they have a fire. And that's where we stand today. Cal Fire is an outstanding organization. They are professional. The people that work in this county, have most of them worked here for many, many years. I spent my career here. I still live here. For the duration of my career, you know, there's been good people that have been in their stations. You know, I know of people up in the Cambria station that, as a Cal Fire employee, spent, you know, 90% of his career in that one station. So, you know, I know there's concern about the turnover and people going all around the state. For the most part, the people that get here know they've got a great thing, like we all do, and they want to stay. So I hope that you will at least, you know, consider and adopt this resolution tonight. It's we'll call this the traffic circle of the fire stations. You know, you took a courageous act. The traffic circle is in Morro Bay Boulevard. You know, there's a lot of public concern about it, and sometimes you just need to take this step forward and try something, or at least look into it, and that's what you're doing tonight. There would be some. There's been some discussions. Are there other options that are out there? While I was your fire chief, we looked at consolidation at a very high level level with Los Osos. We looked at an Estero Bay Fire Protection District with Cayucas, Los Osos, and Morro Bay. Though those were informal looks, we found that there was never enough money to make that happen. We actually even had a discussion with the fire chiefs and city managers of San Luis Obispo, Morro Bay, and then the fire chief and county administrator of Los Osos to look if there was some benefit in doing some program there. And we found that there was not any cost effectiveness in that. So once again, I do urge you to adopt
at one station and one at the other. Therefore, realizing a huge savings, you could have a scenario with a firefighter paramedic at one station and a paramedic and captain at another. So please keep that in mind when you look at the options. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? All right, we'll bring it back to the council. What Carla just said brings up a question for me. Right now, all our firefighters are required to be paramedics. If they are the ones that are working for us, if we should go ahead and adopt CAL FIRE, or they adopt us, whichever it is, and it is all of our existing staff, and they're all paramedics, they're still going to be paid more. Is that correct? I mean, how would that work?
Well, again, it would go, my understanding would be, it would be a level of service. The city will decide the level of service that it wants, whether it's two paramedics on duty all the time or four paramedics on duty all the time. If the city decides that they need two paramedics on duty each day, one at each station, for instance, and we have an excess number of paramedics going over into CAL FIRE, this is really a question for Matt. I would assume they, if they wanted to continue working as a paramedic and weren't needed here, they would give the option to continue somewhere else. But we'll have to ask Matt that question.
Okay.
Yes. When the employees transition over, they we go through an evaluation process as to salaries and training and their current position. And really what we have to do is take a package before the state personnel board and essentially blanket them into state service without benefit of exam is what happens, and they become vested employees. But we cannot harm the employees in that transition. So we would I know your staff. I mean, you have a great staff, and they're well trained. I wouldn't expect any issues at all, and those folks would come over at their current positions. If they're engineer or captain paramedics, they would come over as that. We're a large enough organization that even if you desired to change your level of service, we can absorb them in the system. I think probably most scenarios you would probably use all of those folks here. Our intent would be to keep as many of your employees that wish to continue to work in the city in the city.
Well, that was my question, though. If we do have four of our employees on during a shift, we get the two and two, and they're all four paramedics, but we're asking just for one paramedic per unit. Does our contract cover one per unit, and we just happen to have four?
Right. We would work that out in the process. And actually, in a scenario where you were going to have four people on, I think you would actually need, I think, a couple more employees than you have right now.
Okay. So they wouldn't necessarily be
level,
paramedics. Okay.
You would have a couple of options. If I were going to be, usually I would just carry the extra depth in paramedics. We're large enough that we add positions, or there's people transition or promote out that I can move them into a position and we can just carry them for a while.
Okay.
I don't see it as being an issue.
Okay, thank you. All right. Other questions or comments?
Yeah. Every station is ALS, and they run ambulances as well. So a very large percentage of the employees are in this county right now. The county has paramedics in two stations, in Napomo and Napomo Mesa, and Los Osos has contracted for paramedics on two units out of the South Bay station. And those are the only paramedics that we're operating right now, four units at the moment. We do have a full-time paramedic coordinator as well in our training bureau.
Okay. Was that another one?
I mean, is it time for comments?
Well, I want to ask one. Thank you. I just want to ask a little bit of information. I had asked Andrea if she would talk to the city manager in Pismo about their experience with CAL FIRE and what their position was. I've got something from the mayor of Pismo as well, but what did you find out, Andrea?
I've talked to Kevin Rice a couple of different times as well. He came to the one of the ad hoc committee meetings. He reports that he's pleased with CAL FIRE in the city of Pismo. He's happy with the service that they provided. They also run their lifeguard program. I think the one fact that's important to know is that he came after CAL FIRE took over, so he didn't experience it prior to CAL FIRE, but he's been pleased with what CAL FIRE has done to date.
Okay. And I just wanted to share what Mary Ann Reese, I asked her about this because they did go with CAL FIRE a few years ago, and she said they had a lot of resistance at the beginning, but they wanted to staff two stations with two people each, and they had an assessment done that said that CAL FIRE was going to be less expensive than trying to do it themselves. So the advantages to them have been staffing a second station, and the retirement is less, but they don't have to do negotiations. And they have enormous resources, not just staffing. And they still have their own emblems on their fire equipment. And she said the one thing, the downside, was that if we ever wanted to go back to our own department, it would be a lot of expense. And there was one other thing, too. Something to the effect that there was concern that if the units were pulled out for something that CAL FIRE needed, that they would be short-staffed. But she said that has never happened. They've always been able to bring someone in right away, and it's not been a problem. So just wanted to add that to your knowledge of things, of someone who's actually experienced it. Okay, comments. Who would like to start?
Well, Rick? You know, this is not committing us to anything. It's right. Part of a process. It's not costing us anything to proceed in this. I think we should find out where we stand. So I'm ready to make a motion. I'll let the rest of you go ahead.
Okay. Melody, would you like to comment before he makes a motion?
Yeah, well, I've been a little bit of a hurry to make motions too, Rick, so it's fine. I was on the ad hoc committee, and I didn't like this idea for the longest time, and then I liked it, and lately I've been, like, not liking it. But I would just point out to council that on your attachment one on page two at the very top, it talks about what it will cost to have four firefighters. And it's a $453,000 increase if we do it, and it's always been that. Chief Pond has always tried to get the money for that. And if CAL FIRE does it, they're in a very ballpark estimate, I understand. First name, but I don't know your rank. Okay. But I can certainly tell you that I have always urged this council to get a four on duty, to pay the money out of the Q funds, Measure Q funds, because I believe it is unsafe to go out singly. And I think that we always try to cover with reserves in Morro Bay. But I'm hearing from Chief Jenkins that they're just not going to do that. They're not going to send one CAL FIRE guy out on a truck. So basically, to assure the same level of service, especially in the dual calls at one time, we've got to go to four. And if we go to four, then we've got to come up with, ballpark again, about $400,000 that we don't have. So I'm not sure how we get there from here. The other thing that concerns me is, you know, our failure really, historically, and I think the management partners pointed out that we have not considered putting a utility user's tax on the ballot that would pay for some firefighters, a 9/11 fee or a paramedic subscription fee, which I brought before the council, just kind of fell dead. That would pay for another firefighter. So we've never really considered alternatives that would keep us local. Then, looking at the state of California as somewhere we would go to trust is ironic, and no offense to CAL FIRE or anybody but in particular, but we've railed against the state of California for years. Every year I've been on the council, they're taking away our money, they're taking away our money, and now we're going to run to the state for coverage. So I looked up what's the state of California's budget situation right now. As of October 8th, 2008, after they'd signed in the budget, California is $1 billion in the red because their sales tax revenues are down. Schwarzenegger went to the feds asking for a $7 billion loan. And then when you talk about retirement stuff, I am a state employee, and I went to the CalPERS site the other day, and CalPERS, in the stock market crash, and it was a bit better today, they managed to lose $40 billion in their stock investments in the last 6 weeks. They still have $190 billion, though, so Chief Jenkins and I make it our retirement still. So I'm a little suspicious of the whole deal. I understand that this is a resolution, and Chief Pond, stop me if I'm wrong about this, but we can negotiate the whole contract. They can come back with the amount, and we can still vote no. But we'd probably feel bad because they've gone to all that trouble, right?
Right. We're letting them know we have the intent to do it, but it's pending the acceptance of the contract. So they would come back with the contract or options for the contract. And the council would have to agree to those terms or not.
Well, I have full intention of assuring this fire department that of continuity. I have not admired a single department in this place, and especially a department head. And I told you this the other day, as much as I have you and your department for what you've struggled with. But the point is that if we go to CAL FIRE with three, which means a continued level of service, he's got to put the three on one truck because he won't put one on a truck, which isn't advisable, really, okay? I mean, he's got a point. So if we go with four, in the future, when they come back, if you're not willing to devote Q money to this effort for payroll, for people, for staffing, which you have not been willing to do so far, then where will you get the money?
Madam Mayor? I would add to that, not only is it morphed for the mandatory four, which I think will be required of us and is an immediate cost to us, but there's also the immediate overtime that we are going to have to pay to make up the difference between the 56 hours and the 72 hours, because we will have to pay at our current rate, which is higher than what others are, and to pay for that level. So I'm seeing an immediate cost to us, and I think it's misleading to the state to not have the money in hand and have them do the work and come back and then say no when we don't have the $750,000 extra that we're going to need to fund this new program. I think it's a better idea because what I feel is that the department or at least the workers are telling us we want another person on duty. I think it's cheaper for us to do that in-house than it is to go out-house and get it done that way. I think it's unlikely we would ever have an Amador station here. I think we're going to have to be, we will be told that our apparatus have to be at a certain standard. We will not have control over that. There's going to be an additional cost there at some point that you have no control over. The idea of these apparatuses, that's another $60,000, and hopefully there'd be a grant for that. I think the fact of keeping the local chief or whatever workers we want will be at the discretion of whoever is the boss of San Luis County, and it may be Mr. Jenkins, and if he gets moved, we don't know what the philosophy of the new person will be. The mutual aid, we already have mutual aid agreement. We already have that other kind of agreement right now. I think the point is well taken about the overhead being able to go up. I'm not seeing a benefit to the city as a whole to ask for this agreement to go forward. And I think it's misleading to ask CAL FIRE to do that, knowing that we don't have the money.
Bill?
Okay. First of all, I don't know how many of us got a telephone call from Steve Knuckles today on his way to the fire.
Thank you for saying that. Let me say as a disclosure, okay. I talked to him on his fire.
Yeah, Steve is, I guess, the strike team leader for the stuff that went down there. So he did call while he was on his way, wanted me to convey his thanks to the rest of the council for looking at this and for where we've been on it so far. Okay, having done that. Let me also say that, unfortunately, a lot of this has gotten involved in politics, which drives me nuts because there's no benefit to it. We've had people mailing things out and everything already expressing our positions on this. Let me say that my personal position is we need to find out. We need to get the numbers. If we're going to talk about is it good or bad to go to Cal Fire, we can't because we don't have the numbers. What I've always been a supporter of our fire department. I think they're superbly trained. They're a fantastic group of people. I'm also a supporter of the people who live here. And I think we owe it to them to provide the best service at the lowest cost. Now, yeah, there's extra overtime involved, but they also work more hours. And we don't know how that shakes out till we get the motion that we send this resolution and ask CAL FIRE.
Okay. There was something that you had I had a question in there about. Oh, I know. If we were to go ahead and pass this resolution, who determines what we ask for in the package? Is that something that we as a council do? Is that at a future meeting that we come up with that, what we're actually looking for?
Well, I think we have a pretty clear direction from previous meetings and documents as far as where we'd like to be. The five-year strategic plan, the ad hoc committees have all pretty much looked at that four-person staffing as being where we'd like to be. And we know where we currently are with the three-person staffing. I think it would be prudent for us to request several options, including those two. And if Matt was amenable to that, coming back with, you know, more than one option for us to look at.
Yeah, because, I mean, like the paramedic situation and all of that.
And going back to the four-person staffing, there is another option with that four-person staffing. While we desire to have four full-time professional firefighters at paramedic level, there is that option for doing what Los Osos is doing with three full-time paramedics or three full-time firefighters and one reserve firefighter staff. So that would take that $400,000 price and knock it down some. But we have to look at actual numbers to know exactly what those actually mean, making those changes.
Okay. I'm going to go back to something that came up when we did a forum for the public safety. And I did a survey of all the cities in the county and how much of their general fund they spent on public safety. And they were all like 45%, 42%, 48%, 41%, 41%, 36%. That was Pismo Beach. And I asked their finance director, why? Why is it so low compared to every other city in the county? And they said CAL FIRE. So that was very telling to me. Obviously, they got a deal that was better for them. My concern here is that this was brought forward primarily from our firefighters. And I respect them. I really do. I know not all of them are in favor of this, but I respect that too. The point is, to me, the fact that they brought it forward, that they felt that this would be better, and I know that what they're looking at is the good of this community. I don't think any one of them is putting their own personal lives ahead of what's good for this community. So I have to respect that as well. And I think that we owe it to them, out of respect for them, to at least find out for sure. Because until we have those numbers in front of us, we don't know if this is better or worse than what we have. And that's the only way we're going to find out, is to really say, yes, we will consider this if the numbers come out to be good for the city, good for the firefighters, and good for our community. So I'm thinking that I'm going to go forward with the resolution.
Madam Mayor, I think that there's none of us that don't respect the firefighters.
No, I wasn't insinuating
well,
that.
Well, it sounded a little bit like that.
No,
so
not
just
at all.
Let me make clear that we all respect that, and just because something comes from a department doesn't mean that we don't see that from a different perspective, and that we look at perhaps a different angle and a broader angle than what they see.
I'm not sure the ex-party application even applies in this situation because
okay.
It's not a property-related interest, but
okay.
I can check.
All right. Thank you. Rick.
Just want to say that, you know, we're going into this in good faith with CAL FIRE, and we have to look at what we're doing. We're looking to determine the actual cost for contract services that we desire. No more, no less. If it comes back, I have no problem saying no. And I'm sure the others on the council feel the same way. If we can't afford it, we can't afford it. It's the bottom line. But until we know, we don't know. So if discussion is finished on this, I'd like to make a motion that
I can answer your question. Ex parte isn't needed. This isn't a quasi-judicial proceedings, so you don't have to do ex parte.
Okay, thank you.
So my motion is that we approve Resolution 62-08.
Second.
Okay, further discussion?
The end of my discussion will be that not only am I doing it for financial reasons, which I think we can't afford to do, and what I would prefer to see us do in-house, I think it's also a loss of control that I don't want to give up.
Anyone else? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, DeMeritt and Winholz opposed. Thank you. Do you want to take a break before our next public hearing? Okay, we'll take a short break and get to our final public hearing. Reconsideration of Palm Avenue right-of-way abandonment and pathway requirement. And let's see, Rob, we have you in charge on this one.
Yes. Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. This is a reconsideration of the abandonment of Palm Avenue. Council did approve the abandonment at their June 9th meeting and with Resolution 45-08. At the August 25th meeting, Council placed reconsideration of Palm Avenue abandonment without the walkway requirement on the City Council agenda. I will stand by my opinion that I don't believe that a walkway is, at this location, is the best location for a walkway. It would put pedestrians out on the north side of Main Street with no pedestrian facilities. It would be a mid-block crossing. They would either need to walk down to Oak or to Walnut Avenue to make that crossing legally. With that, we request Council adopt Resolution 63-08, rescinding Resolution 45-08, and restating the adoption of Palm Avenue with the condition for the walkway deleted. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions?
Desire? Well, I mean, Council as a majority put it on as a Council item to bring it back. So I don't believe it's any type of reconsideration as you normally have. It's when it's decided at that same meeting or directly after that, a reconsideration of the same motion. So I believe it's a new hearing. That's why we brought it back as a public hearing to reopen it for a public hearing and treat it as whether you want to rescind it and hear it on its own merits. I think that's the way to do it, and it doesn't matter what your previous vote was. That's my initial reaction to how we got here. So it doesn't need to be made a motion by the previous who heard it or not, but it certainly is open to interpretation.
So at any decision we make, I can bring it back anytime?
I'd rather not start that process.
Well, then isn't that a reconsideration?
Well, I think part of it, too, isn't it, that there was an attempt to go along with what we said, and then they ran into some problems with it. So it's new information in that way?
I got no new information in here. In fact, I sent an email saying I got no new information, so why is this here? And Mr. Leibick said what he said now, that Council said they wanted to see it back as a reconsideration was the term that I heard. And so that's why I want a clarification on whether this is truly a reconsideration.
Okay. Maybe that'll come out. And I know that when I brought it back for the agenda again, it was because there were some concerns with insurance and everything else for the walkway. So that's what I thought we were.
Do you recall what the previous vote was on this? The minutes from the last one are not included.
There was no vote. It was, I think, with the mayor's...
No, I mean at the original...
Oh, the original vote was, I think, a 3-2.
A 3-2.
And who was in favor of...
Guys and gals.
The middle was for it.
So any three of those can make the motion to change it when we get to that position. That would be the reconsideration since they were in favor of it and now are changing their position. If you want to treat it as a reconsideration, then any of those three can make the motion.
So then one of these three would make a motion to reconsider, and then we need 4/5.
I'm going to have to review it for a minute. I didn't think this was necessary. In fact, I'll make the call on this as no. It's coming back to you as a separate, brand new item for rescission of that. The rescission is based on the information that it's not the best idea from a standpoint of staff to do it, and that's the way it's coming back. The motion can be made by anybody, and it's not a reconsideration. If you don't want to rescind the previous, then the motion be made not to rescind it, or you can do the new resolution. That's a better way to handle the situation. Can this happen with any resolution? Absolutely, it can happen on any other resolution. I don't recommend that, but if in fact a resolution was made on any other item, the council can bring that back as a future agenda item, and that's how it got here.
And as a matter of fact, you did. You brought back the roundabout for reconsideration.
Yes, I did, and it was under a reconsideration vote. But you're asking for this to be not as a reconsideration.
But that wasn't a reconsideration vote about the roundabout. You asked that the one at San Jacinto.
Yes. No, that was a brand new item.
Excuse me.
We decided before, and you asked that it be taken off the list, so we voted on that. I find that very similar to this.
Excuse me, so that the two of you don't go at it over there. I would just suggest that if you remember, Ms. Winholtz, the cell phone issue, that it was in staff's opinion that we needed to bring that back here and for a public hearing. It's just unfortunate.
All right, then let's have the applicant talk about this, because that's where I got the information. Kathy, would you please address the council?
I wrote a letter to the mayor and council regarding this issue, and I did bring up one of the new issues in my letter, which was stating that the property owners were found out by constructing and maintaining this walkway would be required to establish somewhat of a homeowners association to be able to do this for the future, which was not an item that we discussed at the city council meeting when you heard this at the first time. And also found out some more information about the liability issues and what it would all entail, and it looks like it would be problematic. I was going to tell you that in my presentation tonight. Problematic to have the property owners supply the city with a release of liability language that we may definitely encounter problems that the city and the homeowners might not agree on the language for the release of liability, which is what the council wanted to have happen for the property owners. So hopefully that's clarification. But I started
with
the letter.
And that's where I got that information, was the letter that Kathy sent. That's what anticipated the agenda item. So
what happened to the communication then? So I'm understand, and I hang out with this Ms. Novak, because you might answer this too, but what's happened to the communication here? That I recall Ms. Novak coming before us and saying something in public comment about this insurance thing, but that it doesn't get communicated to our city engineer over there, Mr. Livick, and then it doesn't get into the staff report. And I do remember getting your letter, but I get lots of letters in that mailbox, as you recall. But so it's here before us to consider, and I'm not quite sure about this procedure and why we haven't assured. Did you submit that letter to Mr. Ambo to submit to staff then, too, that you sent to the council?
Well, you know, I can go back and look at the letter and see who I CC'd on it, but it went to the council, and then from the council it went down to staff, but the council took action to...
No, nothing goes from the council down to staff. That would go to Andrea, the city manager, and then that would go to staff. I don't give things to staff.
Well, I'm sure that I CC'd at least Rob Schultz on the thing. I believe I CC'd Mr. Ambo, too. I'd have to go back and look at the letter exactly, the CCs.
No, he's saying...
I try to include staff on the CCs for the department that I'm writing a letter about.
Well, and you know, I don't want to be combative here, but I'm just saying that it's for the reason for my staff to weigh in about what the applicant is saying, see, before it comes before council for a discussion. And I think that that part is not here. It would give Mr. Ambo or Mr. Livick on their end of things. Well, and he has always stated that he didn't want a walkway there. But it would also give Mr. Schultz an opportunity, or the city manager, an opportunity to talk about this release of liability statement. What's possible? What can we do or not do? But to simply ignore that communication breakdown that's happened, and for us to go ahead and reconsider it tonight, I think is precipitous, and I think it sets bad precedent for our procedures here. I would certainly urge us to go ahead and bring this back, but bring it back with a full, fleshed-out staff report that considers what the applicants are saying.
I just looked at my letter. The CC's wind turbines issues at all?
No.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, when we voted on this the first time, and I believe I did not support it because I didn't want to see the walkway, we were not aware of the fact that the walkway would require a JPA or a homeowners association, and we also talked only briefly about the liability. As a matter of fact, I believe I asked that if it's going to be a walkway and it's going to be through the middle of it, that this be the city's responsibility. But I don't know where that went in the scheme of things. But we didn't know what it was going to entail to the homeowner just because we wanted a walkway. To me, that's additional information. Now, I'm not sure where that goes, but...
Well, initially what we said was that we wanted the agreement to somehow say that the city would be responsible for the liability on the walkway. And then what I believe Kathy informed us was that the city couldn't actually take that responsibility. It would still require the homeowners to have some sort of an organization that would accept the liability. So that's where bringing it back came
right.
from.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
So,
it needs to come back because by doing what we did, we created an entirely different can of worms.
Right.
Period.
So perhaps we could listen to Kathy's presentation, which she said will be under 5 minutes, and see if that resolves the issue for us. Okay? Since she's here, she's waited.
And so are you saying we'll have a public hearing and we may, and then
yes.
we can decide whether or not
yes.
to
absolutely
continue it?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. Well, good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here representing the four property owners for the Palm Avenue abandonment. I may be a little bit repetitive, so bear with me. I'd like to thank staff for their time and their consideration and the recommendation for approval of the Palm Avenue abandonment without the pedestrian way. I have previously voiced concerns over several issues, which include safety, liability, visual appearance, and maintenance. So I will go over those items briefly for you tonight. First, staff has noted in the report that the walkway is problematic and creates a safety issue for pedestrians in that area of Main Street. In addition, the path the way it is proposed will be down the middle of a driveway, which will be accessed by vehicles from both directions. This will create an unsafe condition for both pedestrians and property owners as they use their driveway. Secondly, I objected in part to Resolution 45-08 at your July meeting because I did not believe that it adequately addressed the relief of liability on the property owners in conjunction with the construction and the maintenance of the pedestrian path. The council had also been concerned about placing legal responsibility for any accidents on the property owners. To that end, the property owners were instructed to prepare and provide the city with a legal document that would release them from liability. There is no doubt in my mind that this document will be exceptionally strict, and potentially we may encounter difficulties with the city accepting the proposed language. Thirdly, the Palm Avenue as it stands today is visually degrading the neighborhood because the street is in disrepair and the balance of the right-of-way area is in a weed patch and a trash collector. The property owners wish to clean up this area and beautify it. So as part of the project, they originally submitted a landscaping plan that would provide for several things. Those things are plant materials would be native and drought tolerant. No plant materials will be expected to grow more than approximately 6 feet high to ensure the views from the uphill area will not be blocked by tall trees. Four property owners will be bound together forever. In conclusion, the four property owners still believe that this abandonment will benefit both the city and the neighborhood. It will clean up a visual blight, provide attractive landscaping. It will remove a non-functional city street that is now required by the city to maintain for weed control and paving. It will be a small increase to property taxes, and it also protects view shed for the neighbors. However, the conditions placed on this property to date are overly burdensome, and continuing this would make it difficult for the property owners to do the project. That outcome is not the best interest of the property, nor is it for the community. The benefits and concerns that I have raised in my letter and tonight should outweigh the need to install this pathway and to have the city and property owners spend time, money, effort, and potential future legal problems on this. I sincerely hope that you understand the rationale for this request, and therefore I am respectfully requesting that the City Council rescind Resolution Number 45-08 and adopt Resolution 63-08. Thank you for your time and consideration. I may be available for more questions if you have them.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions about what Kathy presented? Okay. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please come forward. There's only one person in the audience besides Kathy, so I guess that's it. Okay. We'll bring it back to council. I think there is good reason to bring this back. I'm going to start first. And I'm going to say, okay, yes, we're giving an abandonment here, so we should get something in return. I'm going to make a pitch one more time for getting a couple of parking places at that end so that they can be used by some of the dockside leaseholders. So that's my idea.
Madam Mayor, the parking places you're talking about are up on the other street?
Yeah, on Walnut Street.
There's somebody parks there all the time now. They park a truck there.
That's right. I know, but I'm at in parking places that are for
They're not going to walk down to the other side. I mean,
who's parking the truck there?
Well, it's not somebody that lives on the water.
It's Barron's Orchid.
That's where a lot of the problems were at the Windmill House. So,
I don't think Barron's Orchid parks.
Okay, fine.
Here we are putting more things on it. I mean, let's kind of keep it simple.
Okay. Go ahead, your comments.
Do I make your... My comments are those that I've made before. We're gifting these four homeowners with extra land. I think it's a minimum of 6,000 feet. It may have even been 7,200 square feet. With nothing in return. There are currently parking places there. People want to park there, and they do. So to say that they're going to give us parking places... is you can't give something that's already there. So there is no gift, there is no exchange there. If there is no sidewalk, again, there's no public access through this, so it becomes completely private property. So again, there's no public gain. I see no reason to do this exchange. If those homeowners are truly concerned about beautification, I think they would do what people have done up on Cerrito Peak, what they've done over on Juniper, what they've done on Ironwood, where they just go in and plant on public property and make it more beautiful. And the city doesn't seem to mind that at all. I think what's really going on here is that two of the four neighbors have actually already encroached into public right-of-way, and they want to keep that guarantee. And I don't think that's appropriate. So if either we...
Well, you know, really, what we... The homeowners there, and I'm not advocating this, the homeowners there would be better off if we were to tell staff to put the street in, take the barricade out, pave it through, make it go all the way through. Then they'd have driveways, and they actually would be better off instead of a dirt patch. But, you know, I at this point still feel that what's really the thing to do right now is just adopt Resolution 6308 and go back to the other way.
Rick?
Well, albeit very small, that we would realize an increase in property tax. It's not much of a gift when you go by and look at this. It's in bad disrepair. It's a liability issue for the city. So I don't feel real strongly about holding on to that. We're not doing the upkeep on it. We can't afford to do any meaningful improvement to it. It's just there. And, you know, it seems to be, it is not only illegal, I think Rob said the term illegal to cross there, but it's not safe. So I would go along with Bill on adopting Resolution 6308.
Melody?
I voted against this abandonment the last time, and it wasn't even about the walkway. It's giving up public spaces, and it's starting this precedent. And I said the last time that there are all kinds of little street nubs around town that the neighbors in those areas, you know, all along Juniper, the little street stubs that go up the hillside there, and all those. This will encourage all those neighbors now to say, hey, we'd like to have our little street place too. And so we start to lose, you know, our public space. Now, We fought for a walkway last time as a compromise, and then I agreed to the abandonment because we got a walkway. We got something. It seems to me, if Mr. Levick, if you could follow me on number six of all the resolution, whereas number six is setbacks and lot coverage for future development shall be calculated based on lot lines prior to the abandonment, right? So in other words...
That's correct.
But the lot lines are changing, as I look at Exhibit A here, from existing lot to revised lot lines.
Yes, there was some concern at Planning Commission that by abandoning the street, it would allow the abutting property owners mm-hmm. to expand development into the abandoned street area and potentially block views. This is language that working with planning staff that we came up with to protect that from possibility of happening.
And so this condition number six here about their setbacks and lot coverage is based on the old lot lines, not the new ones. Is that going to be deed restricted and put into their deeds?
This resolution actually gets recorded against the property, so it would serve as...
What about the property owner that already has encroached? Will he be allowed to keep that legally then?
Yes, that's a retaining wall and patio area, not building area.
Mm-hmm. So it legalizes what's already illegal?
Yes. There's a lot of encroachments into the public right-of-way on a lot of streets in town that do not have... city permission to have that encroachment, and this is by the applicant requesting abandonment, it has brought that encroachment to light as we don't have that benefit with all the other encroachments into the right of way.
Okay, will you finish, Melody? Okay. All right. We've done this before. We've abandoned areas before. We abandoned a street by Memorial Elementary when it was for the benefit of the public school. Now it's not a school anymore. You do it. You do it with places of property that you don't feel are productive for the city, or maintenance of them is not a productive thing to be doing. And as was just mentioned, there's encroachments into our rights of way all over this city, everywhere. Are we legalizing something? Okay, I suppose we are, but it's not as if a lot of other people aren't doing it illegally, and we're not doing anything about that either. So the only thing that we retain in the other instances is if we do want to put sidewalks in at some point, they're going to have to remove the encroachments. This one, we would not have that right anymore if we do this. But I think it's become a tempest in a teapot, I think. I still think it would be nice to have some parking spaces. Obviously, I don't have support for that. But in that case, I think that with the problems with providing a walkway, if that's our only compensation, shall we say, I just don't see that that's an issue. This is not something we need. We don't need this street. We're not using it. We're not maintaining it. All we need is the utility easement, and that will be retained.
May I ask a question, City Attorney? Can we ask them to pay for the land?
Yes.
Okay, then I would much rather see us ask for some, if we're not going to get any tangible results or tangible exchange, either in terms of a sidewalk or losing public right-of-way, where we currently have public right-of-way, so we're actually losing a public benefit, then I would like to see these people pay for what their benefit is. Plus, they're legalizing something that they've done illegally, and you're sanctioning that. So I think they need to pay for their encroachment, whoever has, and that that's the minimum, and that maybe that needs to be something that's fair.
How do you determine what person would pay for that, Rob?
We can have it appraised.
Oh, really? Okay. I thought because it wasn't a lot, you couldn't do that. But we can? Okay. All right. What's the council's
view? If we're going to ask them to pay for it, then are we going to allow the not right into the title the restriction about building out into it? I mean, if we're going to sell them a lot, they ought to be able to build out into it, shouldn't they? using normal setbacks?
That would seem normal.
And are they going to pay for the appraisal?
Have it made legal.
Okay.
These guys are getting a legalization of something that they've done legal,
if
so they should
strongly,
pay for it.
Why don't you make a motion?
Okay. My motion would be that my motion would be that we not abandon it, and that we would ask the property owners to pay for the encroachments that they have already put onto this property.
Okay. Do I hear a second? Okay. Motion dies for lack of a second. Does anyone else have a motion?
Well, just a comment prior to that. I think, you know, we want them to pay. Well, they're going to be paying. They're going to be paying more property tax for that area. So, you know, it's not like they're really getting anything for free here, and what they're getting is nothing to brag about. So I would like to make a motion that we adopt Resolution 6308.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, Winholtz and Demerit opposed. Okay.
I just have to say that I find the motion that we just passed offensive, that you have said to the public that it's okay to do illegal things, and we will even give you a legal right to do that, and with no exchange. And I hope the community understands that.
So noted. All right. New business. Oh, wait. What do we have the most people here waiting for? That we can, consent agenda or new business? Okay, I guess we better proceed with D1. Resolution authorizing the utilities capital projects manager to enter into a contract with General Electric Water for energy recovery equipment. Okay, Dylan.
Now that I've found a mic that works. Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Tonight I come before you to discuss and to basically ask for authorization to enter into a contract with GE for the purpose of installation support and control equipment for the desal energy recovery project, specifically the brackish treatment trains. That's a mouthful. Also, I'm coming for you to ask you to declare a water emergency for the purpose of CEQA and the Public Contracts Code. And what that, in layman's terms, allows us to do is it allows us to avoid the bidding procedure and process for some local contractor efforts to install the brackish treatment equipment. So in basic terms, we're coming before you tonight to ask you to fund. We've got a capital project that's funded this. So we funded a capital project to purchase equipment for the treatment of nitrates from our Morrow groundwater wells. That's the equipment that we're now coming before you and asking for a little bit more money to finish the installation of that. So right now, all we've authorized to date is the purchase of that equipment. It's going to show up in December, and then we need to get it installed and hooked up. And so what we're here tonight is actually to install and hook up the rest of it. The reason for the emergency and not going through the traditional route of going out to a public bid, awarding a bid to a contractor like we normally would do in projects, is because of the timeline. This equipment's going to show up here in really less than 2 months. And so that we started out at 25%, ended at 30%. So for our purpose, at 30%, we were reduced maybe 5 or 6% of the state water that we get. So we lost 20, 30, 40 acre feet kind of thing.
Right.
At a 15% delivery projection for next year on the state water, we're only going to get 5 to 600 acre feet of water next year out of the state water project if this delivery holds. So this is, as we talk about our community water supply, we sort of have a three-pronged water supply. We have our desal plant, we have our groundwater wells, and we have state water. With state water being seriously reduced, with the contamination of our groundwater wells, we're forced to use the desal plant to clean up that contamination, and we really get down to sort of like a limited or a half source.
So we contracted with state water, so no matter what they send us, we still have to pay it as ratepayers. We're still paying for state water. I've always understood that.
There's fixed and variable, but the bulk of it is fixed. So we're okay. Basically buying into the capital up.
And that's based, I think some of the problem with state water is this little fish, but I think more of it is that the snow mass didn't last this year. It melted and precipitously. But anyway, the second part of it is, down in your conclusion section there, you say, as the nitrate contamination can now be expected to last at least a number of years. What, I mean, I thought we were going to be more active and proactive about getting those people to get the nitrate off their crops. What's going on with this number of years now?
Well, I think we certainly are pursuing that. We've made efforts there and are continuing to make efforts there. I don't know that anybody knows, once the pollution stops, nobody knows how long that's going to take to clean up. Hopefully it's only a couple of years. Maybe it would be less time than that, but I don't think that there's a safe projection.
But have we made progress with anybody out there, or especially one particular farm, asking them to reduce nitrates? They've agreed, and we're just waiting for it to clear up. I didn't hear we had agreement.
No, and I don't think that we have a fixed agreement, and I don't know that we have anybody out there monitoring what they are or aren't doing. I know that the regional board has requested information from them in those regards, and that we'll get that information when they have it, which is due later this year. So we're still pursuing that, but to date, I don't have a strong, firm commitment from anybody.
So you're asking us to declare a water emergency so you can get around bids, but I've been saying we need to have a water emergency and mandatory conservation efforts declared in this town anyway under our municipal code. So we're going to declare it in order that we can go out and spend $1 million, but will we declare it and say that you can only water every odd day or start to use some of the municipal code power that we actually have? Wouldn't you suggest that we should do even more stringent conservation as well as go out and buy things without a bid?
Sure. That you're looking at conservation always is a good measure. I think we always encourage conservation. That's something that's important to our community and something that our community does a very good job at, frankly. We have a very low per capita water usage. As you look short-term and long-term, mandatory conservation rationing can work. You basically use it as a short-term management tool. But the fix that we're talking about tonight for the...
I understand that conservation alone will not take care of the dire situation that we're in. But under fiscal impact on the first page of your staff report, we talk about buying the desal equipment. And, in fact, we have that covered with the water fund and the capital improvement project. That's for actually buying the equipment. But isn't it true that desal is the most expensive, and so we'll have ongoing operation costs with the desal? Will that affect water rates in this town?
Looking in the crystal ball, I would say at some point in the future, we're going to hit the point as inflation eats away at our water rate where we're going to have to increase water rates. Right now, this project will be funded entirely out of reserves that we've been building up for this purpose. We actually paid off capital of our original desal investment, and we're investing some additional capital there. So this will fall into our current rate structure, and we won't have to raise rates for it.
And then not to buy the equipment, but in the future to actually run this operation.
The operation will actually be cheaper, what we're doing in the future, than what we're doing now. Right now we
run... Because of improved technologies?
Yeah, right now we run the desal equipment, which is designed for the specific purpose of removing salt from seawater to make it drinkable. In order to do that, you have to pump the water up to incredibly high pressures. We're now coming in with this new technology, a new system, which we're calling the brackish treatment system, and that operates at a much lower pressure and a much higher efficiency. So this project is really about recovering the energy, reducing our operating costs, and then giving us kind of more options, basically restoring the purpose of our desal plant.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, comments?
I do have comments, and okay. I think Ms. Demerit's point is well taken, that while we're spending literally a couple of million dollars to upgrade our desal plant to do two different functions, we need to be making the public aware that they need to be conserving. And when I see businesses downtown and residents in the neighborhoods washing down their driveway with water, I know we're not conserving the way that we used to. So I think there's a great need for a conservation push in this town, and I'm sorry that we're not doing that.
Bill?
I have no comment other than to say I'm ready to adopt this thing. I mean, we've beaten it to death. Let's do it.
Okay. Melody, anything else?
If this has been beaten to death tonight, Mr. Pierce, I don't know what you call other discussions we've had here. This is the...
For a lot less.
Gently beaten.
Move approval of
D1.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. However, I think it would be good if we do, perhaps in the next water bill, let's do a little more on conservation and let people be aware of how serious this is.
Well,
I mean,
Madam,
we're taking the steps to avoid a crisis, but it's still very serious.
That's what went out in the mailer. And just as an anecdotal note, that went out in the mailer, and it went out in last month's utility bills. And this is an anecdotal comment. We are one of the most conserving communities in the state.
That's
we
true.
Are right up in the film of the cream of the crop at the top. So
we can always improve. Okay. Item D2, adoption of a position statement for West Coast groundfish individual transferable quota, ITQ, program in federal fisheries.
So that after 5 years, they're prepared to adopt a preferred alternative for individual transferable quota system in groundfish management, basically going from trip limits now to an assigned allocated quota that each fisherman will have, and the transferable, the T part of it, means they can sell it. It's monetized. Very important shift. Many of the environmental groups that are involved in fisheries actually feel this will be a better way to manage. The short story is that many fishermen are not quite sure that's the best way. In fact, most fishermen are sort of neutral to opposed to going to an ITQ system for a lot of reasons that probably aren't worth going into here. Regardless, those positions, the federal government seems, as I said, have sent many signals that they intend to adopt this program in November in San Diego at their meeting of the PFMC. So what we've done here today, the council is well aware, I'm sure, and you have a pretty good feel for most of these issues in the broad brush. The council has adopted many resolutions that authorizes staff or direct staff to, indeed, to work on commercial fishing and support of commercial fishing. I have corresponded with letters like this before, but this issue is of real importance, I think, to the city and to survival of small fishing ports and many of our fishing business in the future. So we decided to present it to you in resolution format. If adopted tonight, it can be forwarded to the PFMC and be included in their informational packet for their November meeting. Do you have any specific questions that I can answer?
One question?
I have two.
One,
under your point, the page that has your points on it, the first one talks about associations, which I think are in addition to individuals. Is that what you're saying here?
So
the associations would be another tool in addition to individuals?
So there's on the second page of the staff report, there's points 1 through 6, or are you talking about the resolution?
I'm talking about number one on the back pie.
Staff.
Back side of the resolution.
The back side of the resolution, okay. Okay.
Sorry, I wasn't clear.
And I'm sorry, would you repeat the question again?
Yeah, under point number one on the second page of the resolution, it talks about associations. And and am I clear in reading this that that's in addition to individuals, that it's one more tool?
Yes.
They would acknowledge,
yes,
associations.
Associations are an emerging area that we are trying to support. We feel that it will help protect small communities by being able to form these associations. And this is a very fluid process. You can tell the complexity of it. Many, many substantial political and financial interests will be involved down there. So it's hard to tell what the real outcome is, but as best we can tell, and there is a movement behind it. I just went back to the office and checked. The PCFFA has also, with their newsletter, just taken a vote to support Regional Fishing Association. PCFFA is the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen Association, the largest small boat association on the West Coast. So anyway, the Regional Fishing Associations is one way that we feel might be able to prevent a strict market move to what happened in New Zealand with ITQs, where we saw all the small vessels leave the small ports and they were consolidated into large businesses and into larger ports.
So my question then is that it's in addition to individuals. It's not taking the place of the individuals.
It would be an ability of individuals to
form
together into regional fishing associations.
Okay. Then my second.
In Washington, California will not do well if processors get share relatively. And those are generally large corporations that have already controlled the market. And processor share is probably the most controversial issue in this, because if the fisherman or the producer will receive less if processors get a share. And if communities also have an opportunity to get a share, or community associations and things like that. So that's where the fight is.
And there's no way to balance that between the processors and the fishermen.
The preferred alternative that the PFMC will be looking at now is 20% to processors, 10% to this AMT, this Adaptive Management Trust, which is a sort of a bank, and then about 65% to fishermen. Another 5% will go to overhead and some miscellaneous things. So right now, their preferred alternative will allocate 20% to processor share. And
How does that hurt the fishermen?
Well, less will go to the producer, as opposed to, for example, 85% going to fishermen, 20% or 10% going to the Adaptive Management Trust.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Anybody want to make a motion?
Motion to approve resolution 6108.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we will go back to our consent agenda. And item A1, consider. Oh, I'm sorry. Does anybody want to pull anything?
A3.
A3, Melody. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Can I hear a motion approving A1 and A2? You don't want to make a motion approving A1 and A2?
Yes, I do. Make a motion to approve A1 and A2.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, A3. Melody.
First of all, congratulations. We are going to buy an electric truck, one electric truck. And as an answer to some of the public comment about this high-cost hybrid, it's because we're buying an electric truck that we're saving enough money to spend more to get a hybrid, correct, Joe?
That's correct.
Okay. So my only fuss with A3, because I'm so delighted that we're going to get an electric truck and so delighted we'll get a hybrid vehicle, is that the $50,000 that they're using here was initially allocated to trucks, and now I've got a truck and an SUV, an enclosed car. And so I've talked to Joe today, and I've given him material tonight, and I've asked him to please tell us why he wouldn't get something like a Chevy Silverado or a GMC Sierra. The GMC Sierra is coming out at the beginning of 2009. I sent Joe a web link to this new hybrid truck. It's coming out with a V8 engine, and will be fully hybrid. It's in early 2009, too, within this fiscal year. And thus you would have a bed for carrying things around, which I think is what Rec and Parks do. They carry things around. So, Joe, could you tell us why you would want a Ford Escape Hybrid if you could have a hybrid truck for the same money?
Thank you. There's a couple of reasons why we decided to do Superintendent.
And why is that, though?
His role would not be to pick up and carry waste materials, any kind of clippings. He's not hauling any equipment around. He doesn't necessarily have that type of tools on his vehicle. He'll be doing not only park maintenance, but also building maintenance. He'll have errands to run throughout the county. He may have visitors in his vehicle, more than one, which a truck probably would not be able to suffice, and to get them around. So we have kind of a different function. If he has an out-of-town conference or seminar or something like that he needs to attend, this vehicle is more adapted not only for his purpose, but also to back up the department as a pool vehicle on certain trips that we might have to attend in the future.
Didn't Harbor buy a Ford Escape Hybrid?
That's one of the reasons why we chose the Ford Hybrid.
I'm worried about that, actually. That's one of the reasons why.
Well, we took your advice. We looked at alternative fuel vehicles, mm-hmm. and I met with various members of the city staff and discussed vehicles and vehicle purchase for the fiscal year, because it's something that we want to be consistent with. And when we talked about a hybrid, We talked to fleet maintenance, and they would like to have some uniformity throughout the fleet, not only for training their personnel mechanics to work on them, just having the history of the fleet and knowing what we're picking up. So I went with the recommendation of the committee. Staff felt that was appropriate for the position that we're putting it into, and that's why you see the hybrid as opposed to a truck.
Yeah, see, I thought you were going to come tonight and tell me, well, this person has to cart kids around down to Lila Kaiser or something, and so we're not going to put him in a truck.
No, we've got a pool van, more mm-hmm. of a 9-passenger van that we take larger groups, and that's not a fuel-efficient vehicle. And I would further add on that the trucks that you directed me to, we're certainly going to be looking at those. Apparently, it's 18 months sometime in early 2009, and we will have other vehicles coming up, and they will be service trucks, and this is something that we definitely want to have a hard look at. For the application that we're going to now, I think that this all-electric vehicle, even though it does have some pitfalls, and one of them being rust, and they're getting actually some rust, early rust, over at Cal Poly on these same vehicles, so we're looking to address that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Garage them.
Yeah, but I think mm-hmm. that there may be something else that we can do. Mm-hmm. But the application on these two vehicles, I think, is very appropriate, and I think that the money should be well spent. And we got an all-electric vehicle and a hybrid as opposed to two gas-powered vehicles,
right.
Big trucks. I think it's a good move.
It's a great bonus.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Rick?
Okay, so we're getting these and we're replacing gas vehicles.
Yes, sir.
And are we losing any capabilities that we would have by going electric versus the gas? Is there things that we're not going to be able to do that the gas vehicles do now for us?
Not in these specific, I guess the bottom line.
If there's no other comments, I'd move approval of A3.
Sorry. Let's give it to Bill. Okay. Any further discussion?
I just would like to say if this is going to be used for travel and for carrying passengers, I would prefer to see it be a vehicle that's a car. I can't imagine justifying an SUV in these times.
Oh, you mean like a – there are several hybrid cars, like a Prius.
I don't. If you're using it for people and it's for a few people, and you already have a vehicle for large transportation, like four, I don't understand the justification for an SUV. But
okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. All right. Please note what
I have a future agenda item.
Yes, future agenda items.
I'd like to agendize the request from Denergy to extend their lease, and I'd like to do that in one of the next two meetings.
The Dynergy.
Dynergy. It's about that letter that we got from Mr. Hickok, I believe. And so I would support that.
In the next two meetings, is that possible?
Well, it'd be a closed session item to begin with. It's involving real property and the extension of the real property lease. So I certainly could have those discussions with you in closed session, but if you wanted to come to open session, we can also have that.
I think at least closed session we'd need to talk about it.
Closed session next time.
Okay. Anybody else? Future agenda items? Okay, just note the time and note my schedule. We are right on time. I'm going to close tonight with a quote from Paul Newman. I've taken roads that I wish I'd not traveled on, and I'm traveling on some pretty exciting ones, too. Just hope when you get to that great racetrack in the sky that the balance will tip slightly into those things you'd be proud of. We're adjourned. Good afternoon, and welcome to the special meeting on Monday, October 13th, joint meeting with the City Council and our Promotions Committee. We don't really have any particular agenda right now. This is more you telling us what you've been up to and what you plan on and where you see us going in the future. And then I think we'll have the council ask questions on anything that we've heard or seen. So with that, David, I'll hand it over to you.
Well, thank you very much. And for the opportunity, I guess, to share not just with the council who are here tonight, but the city who's watching and may not be aware of what's in store for the Promotions Committee. I might point out to those who are, as I'm so used to looking that way, but I... All right, we'll go with this one.
Well, and I apologize for that. The only reason we're on this upper and lower thing is because our meeting follows this immediately. So otherwise, we'd be down there with you.
Okay, we'll go that way. I'm so used to talking to the camera. But to the people at home who might be interested in following the the happy hijinks of the Promotion Committee, you can join us on the third Thursday of every month at 8 a.m. right here in the Vets Hall. And at that time, we open the meeting. There'll be public comment. So people who do want to get involved with the Promotions Committee, perhaps in the way that others are involved with the Public Works or the Parks and Rec Committee, are welcome certainly to come down to our meetings. What we are focusing on, and for those who've been watching, I think over the last year, Peter Candela, who joins us today, will be able to help explain that better, is that we've really seen an upturn in this, the number of events. It's the quality and the quantity of events. It's become a city with happenings. And I will point out anecdotally, for example, I was in Sacramento just a few weeks ago, and I was visiting with our Assemblyman, Sam Blakesley. And his legislative aide, Jonathan, in the office said to me, "Hey, you're from Morro Bay, right?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You know, I love the posters for your events. They're so colorful and graphic and bold. We'd like to frame them and put them up in the office here. Could you get them for me?" I said, "Sure, of course we can." And so we went down to the visitor center and met with some other people and got him a collection of the Harbor Festival and the Avocado Festival and the Fish and Farmer Market and so forth. And I packed them up in a mailing tube and sent them off. And so hopefully next time anyone here visits our legislator's office in Sacramento, you'll be seeing the Morro Bay pictures up on the walls there. And so that, I think, is a very positive is positive outreach. Things like the Avocado Festival that have just done, Margarita Festival that have taken off. The Kite Festival, which has just in the matter of the last 2 years become a major springtime event. And I think that's the direction that we will be going, is having these events as venues to promote the city. Now, on a more fundamental level, of course, there's the direction, as you're aware, again, if you tune into our meetings, that we're looking at dealing with the recessionary economy, the tourism town. And Andrea said not to peek ahead of the agenda till Thursday, so I won't, but I looked at the numbers, and I'll turn it upside down now. And we are going to have to work on that. And to that end, we will be doing as much outreach as we can for the limited budget that we have worked with. And, of course, the council did give us the same amount that we had to work with a prior year. And I think what we'll do is divide this presentation up. We will answer your questions happily. And I think I'd also like to turn this over to John Sorgenfrey from our advertising agency to help show you the campaigns and the various programs that we have out there to market the city. John?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, council members. Thanks for having us tonight. As David said, I'm here just to give you an overview of what we have planned. Some of it is already underway, but tonight we just wanted to really talk about the glass being half full instead of half empty. And we think that, as David said, they're going to have some challenging times ahead of us, but we're already looking toward how we can take advantage of these times and working with the hoteliers and the restaurants and the chamber, all of us working together to really put value onto Morro Bay. And that's really what we're going to be stressing this next year. So I'll go through. This is basically our plan. Whoops. And what we do each year, we set down some goals and objectives. We run this like a business, so any good business, you want to have certain goals and objectives that you want to attain. Obviously, the one goal that we bring forward each year is to increase transient occupancy and local sales tax revenues. We realize that is the most important thing that we can do in advising the council on tourism. We want to continue to enhance our brand image of Discover Your Better Nature, and we're in the process, as you well are aware, of trademarking that. And we saw a real need to do that. Monterey actually stole, or didn't maybe know, that they were going to be using another destination's slogan. And they were actually sued, and the other destination got to keep their slogan. So we feel like that we've invested quite a bit of dollars into this and a lot of effort, so we want to preserve that bit of branding for the city. Continue to promote the tourism website, www.morrobay.org. Develop and maintain strategic alliances with the Visitor Center, of course, and also the County VCB. We see some real opportunities there as kind of a new direction goes there. We're working currently with their board to try to find ways that we can enhance our exposure with them, and we have several co-op opportunities that we have done with them in the past and look forward to doing that this year. And create a new level of awareness among travel writers in the broadcast media. And again,